Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor. Survivor.
21 South Africans. 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million
shkeli. Aldi. Million. Rubli.
Tribe.
Scheibe Tortelle.
Ship.
Hello everyone, Shannon Gus here, getting you ready for the Survivor South Africa Immunity Island first pre-season podcast, a preview of the people you are going to meet on the cast. We'll be meeting five guys today, and the pre-season is officially on. It is exciting times, and actually we thought it was only going to start on Tuesday, so you're getting it a little bit early. We're all very lucky. Actually, I think we end up wishing Asher Bloom a bit of an early happy birthday, because we thought it was going to be Tuesday, but happy early birthday, Asher Bloom. But you'll be meeting five guys today. We have Anella's interview at 11 minutes. We have Chappie's interview around 40 minutes, Dino at an hour 12, Jason at an hour 41, and Kieran at 2 hours and 2 minutes. Those are the guys you'll be meeting, and Mike and I will be giving our commentary on all of that. Such good times ahead. I hope you guys enjoy. Hello everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa Immunity Island. I'm your host, Shannon Gus, here to talk about Season 8 of Survivor South Africa. If you are hearing this, it means the preseason is on, and what an exciting time is that. So to talk about the first five exclusive preseason interviews that we have for you, I have the blank to my blank, my co-host, the great Mike Bloom, and I have to say blank to my blank because I'm coming in, I don't know anything about these five guys we're going to talk about, based on the format of these preseason shows that we're doing.
Yeah, you say that, Shannon, but I know what you're doing here. We're playing the match game. I'm following your strategy. I will gladly be the penis.
Okay, and 1 minute into Survivor South Africa Immunity Island, we've gone full Bloom. We got it out of our system. We're not doing it again, are we? Or we're doing it the whole season, right?
I mean, listen, no, this is just a check-in. You know, I'm staying at the hotel for a while. This is the Hotel California. There's no checking out here.
So if you're new to the Survivor South Africa coverage, you have a great sense of what we're doing here. You understand us. It's been a minute. I really do hope that there are like some Survivor fans who maybe like haven't even checked out Survivor South Africa before. If you haven't, go back, listen to the old podcast, watch the old seasons because it's so good. But also, maybe like there are some new Survivor fans here because this is officially ending the world's longest off-season, over a year, and we're ending it right here.
Does the initial off season count like the 2000 plus years before Survivor came on? Does that count as an off season if it doesn't exist yet?
No, that's like the world's longest preseason. It was thousands. It wasn't 2000 years. Like that's like creationism. Like no, like billions of years. Like
yeah, I guess billions of years. Yeah, I guess I was thinking more so. I didn't want to do the math in my head. So I just started with 2000.
No. What are people going to think of us? Welcome to the Survivor South Africa podcast. We are anti-science.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to Survivor South Africa podcast. God created the Earth penis.
I didn't know what to expect coming in. Obviously, as I'm saying, I don't know anything about what we're doing here. I mean, I know what we're doing, but I don't know the plays we're talking about. And I didn't expect this. So I'm just so unknowing right now. It's very freaky.
Yeah, little do you know, Shannon, it's just 20 minutes of this. That's what each interview is. It's very oddly specific. So here we are. We've officially started the Survivor preseason. We talked about this a bit when we were doing our coverage of Survivor South Africa Champions, but for the uninitiated, those that are arriving, first off, I do apologize about those first couple of minutes. We actually will talk Survivor South Africa Season 8. But
well,
basically,
we just saw so many new fans so quickly.
Like, or gained a lot of really interesting new fans, which, you know, you balance the scales in a typical way. But basically, what's going to happen here?
Welcome, creationists. We accept you and love you.
So how this is going to work is Shannon and I are going to, through a series of podcasts, go through preseason interviews that were done with the 20 contestants from this season of Survivor South Africa Immunity Island. I still need to wrap my mouth around those words, Shannon. I think we're used to obviously saying champions, Island of Secrets, Philippines. We haven't said Immunity Island much, but we're going to be doing it a lot over the next 4 months.
Yeah, I definitely thought I was going to get it wrong in the introduction. I'm surprised that I didn't. We're at Immunity Island. It's a very fitting title for this time in the world where immunity is back up for grabs and so important. Yeah, and we're doing exclusive preseason interviews. So I don't know, have we spoken about this much on podcast before about what LaRue and the team allowed us to do?
Yeah, a little bit. We didn't go into it too much because first off, we have to give major kudos to LaRue Bota, fund of the podcast, and of course the team over at Survivor SA, because they kind of did our dirty work for us, because obviously due to the time zone difference and of course the quarantine period, there was of course not going to be any on site set visits. But what LaRue and its production allowed us to do was to send in pre-written list of about 15 or so questions. Producers asked those questions to the contestants, recorded their answers, and so what we did was recorded ourselves asking the questions and then splicing it into it. So admittedly, look, off the top, I'm going to put the kibitz on anyone who's commenting like, well, these interviews sound like they're not in the same room, because we weren't.
Yeah.
We weren't in the same room when it was happening. So apologies if it sounds a little jarring sometimes. We tried our best in the editing room, but basically what you're going to hear is, you know, us, quote unquote, asking these questions and how they respond to those questions being asked to them.
Yeah, we were not in the room where it happens. We weren't even on the continent where it happens. Couldn't have been further away.
We're really feeling like Burr in that perspective. Ben, you know, we waited for it for a long time, yes. But unlike Aaron Burr, we finally get some recognition here when we finally get our gift delivered. Very nicely so.
Yes, the world has been wide enough for us to do these interviews, so that's nice. And so we're going to do the first five alphabetical men. So what Mike has edited the men, I have edited or will edit the women, and then, so I'm coming in, I don't know these guys at all. We're going to get like my first takes on it, a bit of like what Rob and Josh were doing some of the preseasons for US Survivor. And then we can get Mike's takes on the girls and yeah, just kind of look at it like that. So I'm excited to find out about these guys live on air. Mike is going to play the interviews, I guess, in full. But if I need to like stop and be like, I want to talk about this, we also have left that open.
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe is there, like, a phrase or a word that we can say if we want to stop down and talk about a point?
I love so much that before the podcast you said safe word, and I said, I don't think we should do safe word, and now 8 minutes into the podcast, we're not saying things like safe word, but in the first minute we said penis.
Yeah, listen, I wasn't going to say it until you brought it up again, so now this is, what, twice? Three times in the first 6 minutes. We're at a pretty good rate here. I mean, we could go with an old standard, right? We can say biostrath. Is that too syllabolic?
Or should we go with like steers?
Yeah, like a steer. We could do it steers. Yeah, we could
say monosyllabic like, sponsor.
As if we're like steering the conversation.
Mahindra.
Away, back,
no.
Right?
No.
Outurance.
No, it's going to be steers just based on words. So, okay, if I need to stop down, I will say steers. And you guys can all use that as your safe words going forward.
Yes, just in your day to day, if you'd like to. And the way that this schedule is going to work, it is going to work as well, is that we're going to be putting these out, I think, like every 5 days or so. So I'm doing the first five men today. The next podcast you'll hear in 5 days time will be Shannon doing the first five women. Then we'll go back to the second group of five men and then the second group of five women to close out the cast, because we have no tribe affiliations at this point either. So we figured it might just be easiest to do this. And then after that, we might have some special surprises. I do believe we have Bryce Isaiah in our pocket to do a nice Issa look to give his final thoughts on these contestants. I know that Shannon's going to give her blind opinion today, but Bryce will sort of give his double blind opinion of these contestants. Maybe some other stuff. I mean, at the point this is being released, we are less than a month away from Survivor South Africa Immunity Island happening. So consider this your opportunity to get to know these 20 players that we are going to see play Survivor for the first time in a year plus.
I know. Yeah, we have to make the most of the preseason, make the most of any Survivor that we get, considering this has been a rarity. This has not happened at all. We don't take it for granted, and we will squeeze every ounce of content that we can get out of it.
So today we're going to be talking about, as we mentioned, the first five guys. We have Anella, we have Chappies, we have Dino, we have Jason, and we have Kieran. So we're going to stop down. We're going to talk about them. I think we're also going to intersperse some nifty tidbits from their bios as well, because I believe those are posted on the website too.
So apparently we are recording this a little bit in advance, but you can go to mnet.tv/survivorsa and that should have the bio content. So yeah, everyone head there.
We're not reading the full bios. The bios are actually done really interestingly. They're done more in a narrative style. I know that the US tends to do, you know, field, and then you fill out the field like Survivor you're most like, three things you would bring to an island. But this is done more so in a paragraph-like style with quotes interspersed throughout, which I find incredibly interesting. So we're going to pull some stuff from there, but if you want to see the whole thing, go to the site that Shannon just mentioned.
Also, the interview questions we asked ask a lot of those like bio-style questions, so I think we cover it all.
Unfortunately, not the bio-strath questions. I'm ready to get into it. Shannon, how do you feel on the precipice of not only checking out an entire cast, but checking out at least one quarter of a cast at this moment that you do not know from Adam?
There's no Adam, right?
There is no Adam, yeah. Okay. So you literally do not know Adam because he does not exist on this cast.
I don't know. Usually I'm more prepared for a podcast, but as I said, it's been a little freeing. I'm just excited to get into it.
All right, well, then let's get into it. Let's start at the very beginning. So we are going to start with Anella. Anella is 24 years old, and he is a rugby coach. So let's see if he can take it all the way to the goal. I don't know. Is that a rugby term? Did they say goal?
Why
end zone?
Ask me? No, neither of those things. What the
rugby is more. Rugby pitch. Is much more popular in Australia than it is in the US.
I don't watch rugby. I don't know. I'm so glad my dad will never listen to this. What? Let's Google it. What is the rugby goal? Post? Whatever. Okay, just play Anella.
Taking it to the post. All right. Anella, first interview of Survivor South Africa Season 8. Take it away. So to start, tell us about yourself, your name, your age, your occupation, and what you like doing.
Okay, my name is Anella. I am currently 25 years of age. I'm a rugby coach at the heart of it. I'm busy doing my BSc honors degree in coaching and high performance. And I think for fun, it's just learning and growing in my education in the game of rugby. I live and breathe the game. It's my passion. And if I'm not coaching it, I'm either playing it, analyzing it, or watching it. I'm also quite a sociable person. I love going out and being around good family and good company.
Why are you here on Survivor?
You know, I got into the game of Survivor to challenge myself. You know, I think I have a winner's mentality. I like to put myself in uncomfortable positions because I feel like that's the only way you can grow as a person. And, you know, I really wanted to kind of get a taste of my own medicine. You know, as a coach, you often trying to get the best out of others, trying to make people overcome things that they maybe didn't think that they could. And I kind of wanted to see if I could get a taste of my own medicine. You know, I know this is something that's not going to be easy. And I think that's what draws me to it. I want to try something that's going to challenge me at every turn and at every corner. And I'm excited to kind of see if I can overcome those challenges.
What's your history with Survivor?
I'm still relatively new to the game of Survivor. I got into it with the Philippines season. I believe that was season six. I thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, members like PK, Tevin, and Werner. And then last year, of course, they just took it up to a whole nother level with Rob obviously winning it. Shout out to the Zulu boys. For me, it's really been just those two seasons. But since having watched those two, I've obviously tried to venture out into more. And I've really enjoyed a couple of the American seasons. What I love, or the players that I love the most, was Tony from the American season, Russell Hance. So the villains, I'm really a big fan of the villains. So if I can try emulate some of the good things that they did in their seasons now, then that's what I'll do.
What's one life experience you feel has prepared you most for the game?
Sure, that's a good question. I think there's a lot of things. Firstly, when I just think about from a strategic point of view, my education background, I've done the BCom, and then I've moved on to being a teacher, and now I'm doing sports. And I think kind of having a holistic approach to different aspects and different academic virtues is going to put me in good stead in this game, because I think that it's going to help me approach the game from many different angles. Just outside of that, in life, I think I've also quite experienced my own levels of hardships, which I've had to overcome. You know, at the tender age of 25, which is what I am now, I mean, I've been hospitalized before with encephalitis, which, if you don't know, is very close to meningitis, where you have swelling to the brain and stuff. And you know, I suffered whatever I suffered through that, and then had to go through the, you know, the post trauma and dealing with that, and that was something that I was able to overcome. You know, having before being a coach, I've been a player, and having gone through the good times that you experience in being a player, and then the difficulties of loss, of not getting to where you want to go. I think all of these things have culminated to me being really well prepared to be a good player in this game, to be a hard player. And I'm excited, you know. I also know that, you know, I've got the backing and the support of a loving family at home, which I think that's going to be the compass that's going to navigate me throughout this whole thing.
What do you think people will perceive you as?
How I feel like I'll be perceived, you know, out the gate. I definitely think that some people might draw the conclusion that maybe I'm just a physical threat, or they might view me in that light, which is okay. I'm not here to sway them any different. But I definitely want to show that I can be empathetic. You know, I can appeal to people and endear myself to others, because that's actually who I am at the heart of it. Probably why I'm a coach. I'm a very passionate person, and I think if that can shine through, and the social aspects can shine through, I think that might help my game. Because I'm a very sociable person, and I'll always make an effort to try and get to know everyone. I think one misconception that could be drawn to me straight out the gate is that I'm playing too hard. I'm talking to too many people, which, you know, to an untrained eye, people might perceive me and be like, okay, maybe I shouldn't trust him because he's probably saying the same thing to this person and that person, you know. You don't want to be seen to be having too many conversations too early, you know. But that's just me. That's just my nature. That's something that I can't hide. I want to get to know you. I want to talk to you. So that could be perceived the wrong way. And I think particularly with reference to the actual challenges, the competitiveness or the competitive nature in me will definitely shine through. As much as I said earlier that if I need to play within myself, I'll do that. I know that's it was difficult. It was difficult even just saying that. I know that I'm a competitive person at the heart of it. So I definitely think it won't take too long for people to recognize that characteristic about me either.
Which Survivor player are you most like?
That's a very difficult question. I think how I would like to be perceived is very similar to a Rob. And again, shout out to him. He won it. It's obviously always difficult when you draw the comparisons to a winner. But that's who I am at the heart of myself. You know, I'm an out and out winner. I feel like, you know, it's the small little things that you do every single day which breed success and breed winning. And the reason why I kind of would put myself in that kind of caliber of a Rob is that, you know, he was a very calculated person. He was also a very genuine person. I think he was his authentic self, which is how I kind of view like myself and how I wish to play the game. That's going to definitely be my approach. You know, you can have all the strategies in the world, but you got to be yourself at the heart of it. But another thing which I think he did really, really well is that, you know, the unknown variables, or the variables which weren't known to everyone, or which everyone wasn't privy to, he really used that to his advantage, you know? Things that other people didn't know or didn't necessarily know the truth of, he used to his advantage, which tells me that he's very perceptive, and he's able to play with people's blind spots, which I kind of feel like I have that. As a rugby coach, you know, you have to have that kind of mentality. You know, rugby is a game very similar to chess, where you got to think 2-3 steps ahead of your opponent, which is exactly what the game of Survivor is like. So I definitely feel like he would probably be the person I would view myself in terms of similarities with.
What do you desire in an alliance partner?
Sure, that's a very good question as well. I think in this game of theatricality and deception, it, at the heart of it must be some element of trust. So I think that in an alliance, the most pivotal thing you can do is trust. And I say trust, but you got to trust with a pinch of salt, you know. You definitely just need to take everything at for face value. But you know, trust is going to be the thing that gets you forward in this game. And it's going to be about who can gauge that social landscape the quickest. And that's only going to happen by being open, being willing to listen to others, and then eventually gain that trust. First, to gain trust, you must first listen, you know? So I think that's going to be the most important thing. And to keep your wits about you, you know? Yeah, be open to don't just close everyone off, you know? You have your alliance, but still formulate relationships with everyone. Because at the end of the day, the very same people that you take out have to be the people that are going to ultimately decide who gives you the million, you know?
What is the ethical or moral line for you in the game of Survivor?
Look, I think that one thing that I've been able to do, having been here in this isolation and during this quarantine, is kind of allow myself to just free myself of who Anela is outside of the game and who Anela is inside of the game. You know, I know who I am. I know who I am at the core, and I know that there's my family out there who also can vouch for my character. And at the core, Anela is a very trustworthy person, an honest person. But this is the game of Survivor. You know, I have to take off the hat of being a son, being a student, being a brother, et cetera, et cetera. I have to take that hat off, and I have to wear the hat of I'm a competitor in the game of Survivor, and I'm here to play for R1 million. And with that in mind, I think my competitive nature will shine through. And if need be, if being deceitful, if withholding information is going to advance my game, then that is something that I would be prepared to do because it's part of the game.
Would you rather be voted out pre-merge or get 0 votes at the final tribal council?
I would rather get 0 at the last tribal council. You know, I would not have done the entrance had I not thought that I was going to win. And at the heart of it, at the base of it, I still very much do. Again, kind of telling you, you know, about my mentality. I think with the first audition application, you know, as soon as that went up online saying that season 8 was open, I wrote it on my vision board, which I keep in my room, right next to where I study, where I write all my plans, all my rugby aspirations, etc. I wrote the first thing, I will be the season 8 Survivor SA winner. And I still have that mentality now, and I think that's going to carry me through right to the end. So I'm definitely not trying to fight for second place. Second place is just first loser.
What will be the biggest component of your game? Physical, strategy, or social?
I think the best way to encapsulate how I wish to play this game is to allow for flexibility. And flexibility in the sense that I need to be flexible and be able to kind of draw from all three of them when it's required. And even within the three of them, I need to be flexible. You know, I have my own strategies and plans of how I'm going to play, but that may not pan out the way I want it to. So I need to be okay with that. From a physical point of view, I know that I may pose a physical threat. I need to be okay with that. I need to maybe at sometimes I might be required to play within myself, you know, to not put the targets on my back. And sometimes I'm going to have to go hard at it, especially when there's things like immunity up for grabs, or you know, what if I'm lucky enough to get to merge, or when I get to merge, you know, go give it 100%. So. Just within the different aspects of the game, the social one included, I just want to kind of allow for flexibility. Be present, be mindful, be aware of what's happening in my environment, but, you know, kind of don't plan for too far in the future, because I think that if you look too far into the future, you forget to see what's happening right in front of you. So I've already got that end goal. It's been written on my vision board for months now. Now it's just to take everything day by day in increments to get to that end goal.
What's your favorite advantage in Survivor history?
I really enjoy it when you win that idol that allows you to play the idol once you've seen the vote. That's a brilliant advantage. But at the heart of it, any advantage is a good advantage. It's all about how you use them. You know, as I said earlier, what made Rob so good is that he used the unknown variables to his advantage. And what everyone doesn't know, depending on how you choose to frame it, how you choose to put it out there, can work in your advantage. So, yeah, I'm excited for any advantage that comes my way.
What food would you sit out an immunity challenge for?
I think the deeper and deeper we go into the game, probably the more I'll be longing for a nice, large, cheesy pizza, you know, get those carbs in. But early, if it was early stages, definitely something high in protein, you know. Protein keeps you fuller for longer, and it's going to be a scarce commodity on the island. So, yeah, it all depends on where, but I definitely think at the top of that list would probably be a nice pizza. Yeah, bacon and ever. Bacon fitter ever.
What celebrity or fictional character would you want to come out for a loved one's visit?
So a fictional character would be Brad Pitt in the movie Ocean's 11. His character in Ocean's is Rusty Reynolds. And he's like, you know, he's part of the brains of the operation. Ocean's 11, it's a movie about heists and stuff. And I think he's very, very just slick and calculated in the way he's depicted in that movie. And I definitely think he would have some good advice to give. You know, there's a quote in that movie, which if you know, the movie's ancient, but I've never forgot it, you know, where he says, don't use seven words when four will do. You know, that's something that I plan to bring into the game off the gate, but I think he would be someone to get some good knowledge and information from. Otherwise, maybe I love my villains, hey? In Marvel movies and stuff, I love my villains. So maybe like a Bane, well, he's from DC Comics, Bane or Joker or Thanos, one of those guys. I'd love them to come through for a visit.
If you could have any superpower, what would it be and why?
Wow. If I could have any superpower, it would be the power of persuasion. And that would be very important in this game, because if I could persuade everyone to just vote for me and give me the R1 million, I'd be R1 million richer. So in the context of this game, I think that would be the most important power.
So it's about 24 hours before the game starts at the time you're recording this. What's going through your head as you're about to enter the game?
Right now, you know, we've been doing the lockdown, the quarantine for 13 days. So to frame myself and to get myself in a mind state now, 24 hours before, it's been relatively quite easy because I've had the luxury actually of being able to get myself into that headspace, you know, for the past 13 days. So I'm excited to go. And I feel like with excitement comes a bit of nerves, but you know, at the heart of nerves is the word nerve, and nerve is to be courageous in a demanding environment, you know. So I'm just excited to go, and I think that's going to translate in the next 24 hours. Yeah. So when we got the tree mail this morning, it was bright and early. Got a knock at the door. Thought to myself, it's a bit early for breakfast. And it was around 4 o'clock. I switched on the lights because it was quite dark in the room, and I read the tree mail, which basically said that the game had begun. You know. So in my mind, I didn't account for that the 24-hour notice period. So I already just kind of wrapped myself into those last-minute preparations. You know, I said a little prayer. I have here a picture of my family, which I've, you know, kept close to my bedside here this whole time. I said a little prayer. You know, I asked just for the Lord's guidance, the Lord's support, obviously. I'm a very spiritual person, and I think that all of those things, all those mental, spiritual, and psychological preparations were done. I had my last little jog in and around the hotel room. I did my last few stretches in anticipation for the first challenge. So I was already ready, and I'm quite excited that I've been able to do these preparations 24 hours beforehand, because you know, I feel like I've already got a day's jump on the rest of the contestants.
Is there anything else you want to mention about yourself before you begin the adventure of a lifetime?
Yeah, look, I think, as I said before, for me, the most important thing is to kind of just approach everything by being present. being staying in the moment, taking every single interaction, every single conversation for what it is, you know, not disregarding any of them. Because that's extremely important. You know, I definitely, like I said before, I want to listen before I speak. And I think that will help at least gain a bit of trust and appeal to people's empathetic side. And from there, hopefully gain the trust, because trust is going to be important, you know, to kind of get you through. You're going to need to build an alliance. You're going to need to put your trust in someone. You know, there's strength in numbers. So for me, that's going to be very important, is to try to get the lay of the land, suss out what the social environment is quickly. And once I've got that, you know, try to get myself in a position of higher numbers, you know. And then over and above all of that, it's just allow for flexibility in all my actions. And as a super fan, another thing which probably I haven't touched on too much is that, look, there's going to be idols around, and guaranteed I'm going to be looking for them. You know, there's no such thing as downtime. if there's no challenges, if there's nothing to be cooked, if there's no water to be collected, I'm going to be looking out. I'm going to be out there searching, and I look forward to it. I hope that I can find some without any clues. In the short amount of seasons that I have watched, I've probably watched, as I said, season six here in South Africa, and maybe two or three in the States. But already feel like I'm a super fan. And in the short time, I kind of feel like I know that they're going to be out there, and I have an idea of where to look for them. And I guess I won't know until I try. And if I don't try, I'm going to miss that opportunity. So I'm definitely going to be playing hard, playing fast from the get.
And there we have it, Shannon. That is Anella.
People really bastardize the word superfan. And I'm like, he is transparent with the fact that he's not really a fan. Like, that's so fine and fair, and people have said often better. I'm going in, and then at the end, he has to drop in the word superfan. Like, why do you feel that it's something?
Maybe it's more so that he's a fan and he's super excited to be there. Maybe it's more of a portmanteau.
Yeah, I hope so. Otherwise, after that, just like grated on my nerves. One word I would use to describe Anella, I would say, is idealistic. Like, I feel that he's got it all worked out. He has a lot of thoughts. I didn't disagree with most of what he was saying, but it just felt like every single thing we asked, it just went to that, like, perfect place. Like, as an example, where, like, social game, physical game, or strategic, he's like, all of them, perfectly. You know, like, I would almost, like, take more from someone who's like, I'm gonna be honest with you. I will be bad at this portion of the game, but I can use my skills in this other portion of the game, because there's, like, more awareness there. I feel like for him, you know, again, he wants to be like Rob Bentele, like the best player of all time, don't we all?
Right.
But, like, can you get there? He set himself some lofty goals, even when we were, like, pre-merge or zero vote finalist. He's like, I'm here to win. It's like, that's not the assignment, yeah. Anella.
No, neither option. Yeah. I choose to win.
Yeah,
I see through your ruse.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of his strengths, let's read something from his bio here, because this is very much going to appeal to you, Shannon. Anella was asked about his strengths, and he basically says, I'd like to think that I'm quite a likable and charismatic individual that can empathize and connect with most people on a truly personal level, much like a Ross, Joey, Chandler, Monica, Rachel, or Phoebe, everyone either knows of or has a friend back home that I resemble. And that familiarity and relatability is something I'll use to develop trust and navigate through the game. So even there,
yeah, exactly my
he's
point.
He's like, which friend are you? He's like, oh, all of them. I'm all of them.
All the
right
best
now
parts of all of them. Like, exactly. Okay, if you ask me which friend am I say Monica, because I know that I'm like, you know, I have her good elements, her like passion and all of that, but then I also have her bad elements, her competitiveness, her A-type personality, like all of that. Because I'm one, you know, like, I put myself into one character and I know my strengths and weaknesses. This guy is just all strength, physical or otherwise. So he seems like a perfectly nice guy, but I just think he has, like, some very lofty goals. I do see him making it far because, again, he seems like a nice, normal individual who is obviously a physical asset. I don't see how he wouldn't make the merge. I just think that if and when he falls, it'll be a hard fall because this guy's not even going out there to win. He's going out there to definitely win as, like, the best player ever, who's perfect at this game, who's never done anything wrong, who'll never have any downtime. Yeah, like, there was no, like, where are the holes? Like, tell me what's wrong with you so I know what's right with you. This guy's just, like, the perfect person. That can't be true.
Shannon, if there are holes, he's going to reach in and look for an idol
right.
in them, which I find very interesting. Yeah, let's talk about this. I mean, this is a guy who relishes the Tonys and the Russells. Spoiler alert for some of the guys, at least in this batch, Tony really front of mind when talking about Survivor characters, which I suppose makes sense, right? I'm not sure when Winners at War aired in South Africa, but they filmed this, what, over the summer? So if it aired reasonably close to when it aired in the U.S., then maybe Tony was really front of mind. I know certainly people are going to talk about Tony's game in Winners at War. And so, you know, if that's the most recent season that they saw, I think it's very much going to be top of mind. But, I mean, I give it to Anella at least to, we talk about this all the time, right? People who either really double down on being the villain or those that are the villains, the coaches of the world, even though they're trying to be the hero. Anella is totally fine being the villain. To the point where his loved one would be Thanos.
I love that. That was my favorite part of the interview. I was like, that is such a good choice. He could snap away half the competition. It makes so much sense. I love that.
But though I guess, so in that case, would it be more like less of a loved one and more of a, hey, do me a favor type of thing while you're here? Would you mind snapping away half my competition?
Yeah, I mean, it's like a marriage of convenience. I think you get Thanos out there and he snaps away half the contestants. I mean, you don't have control over it. So worst comes to worst, you get snapped out. That's the risk that you take, 50-50. But I wasn't reading villain much. Like, I guess he just seemed, like, too regular to me. You can go in and like the villains, and I do think there's that sense, not of arrogance, but definitely, like, extreme confidence that can often make for a TV villain, but I wasn't really reading villain. I was just reading, like, nice, normal guy who maybe doesn't understand how hard this is gonna be exactly, just because he thinks, like, he can get it all done. If I were him, like, he just has such high hopes. So I like hope for the best for him because I do think any four will be a great one.
True to the talk about the multiple answers, there's a couple things from his bio. First, he is a Gemini, and I don't want to go full astrology, but isn't that the thing as well, that they're a bit divided because they're balancing the scales? Or is that more of a Pisces?
You found the one thing I know less about.
Oh, no, Gemini are the twins. Sorry, I'm thinking about Libra is the scale. But Gemini, yeah, that's another thing, is that you're often divided. And when asked about his weaknesses, Anella said that he has, you know, he can find himself being called or driven to action by his intuition and passion. And Anella says, this can sometimes lead me to be either impulsive, irresponsible, and kind of indecisive. Even within that sentence, there are so many paradoxes. You cannot be impulsive and indecisive at the same time.
I think indecisive is the word, though. I think that's, like, the one that he's touched on. That's, like, the first, this is, like, the first sense of, like, any weakness he's shown to us, I think, in, like, any of the answers, really. But he's so indecisive. Like, that is a good call, but that's some good self-awareness, because he can't decide what friend he is. He can't decide what portion of the game he wants to be. Like Anella. Come on, man. We gotta make some decisions.
Yeah. So you mentioned before about how you feel like he's making the merge. I don't know if that's the case in Survivor South Africa. I mean, look no further than what happened to Rocco, who we thought probably on paper from a physical perspective, literally an Olympic athlete gets voted out pre-merge. I do wonder if the cast is particularly hungry, if they feel like, okay, this guy's too big of a threat. If it's a couple rounds before merge, they say, yeah, let's throw Anella to the curve here. But I think that Anella is going to try to, I think, be craftier than that. I think he's trying, at least at the outset here, like you said, he might be biting off more than he can chew. But at this moment, he's trying to license himself as the complete package of, yeah, I'm the rugby coach. Yeah, I'm the guy that's probably going to beast through the challenges. But to make sure that, you know, I won't just be regarded as a physical threat, I'm going to find idols. I'm going to try to be empathetic. The question is, how much does that translate to the game proper?
Look, if Anella can deliver on even half of what he has promised us, he will be the best Survivor player that has ever lived. He will be an idol-finding, challenge-winning, strategic, masterminding god of the game. You know, we'll see how much he can deliver on that. I mean, he has set himself that task, and I will watch it play out.
All right. So, should we do any formal predictions for these people?
Why didn't he make the merge? I'm happy to.
Yeah. I'm gonna say pre-merge just to shake it up. I could see him as a total pre-merge blindside, but I'm happy to see Anella either way, because it looks like, again, especially if he wants to channel some Russell hands, some aspect of Russell out there on the island, you know, we're in for entertainment.
I barely know this guy, and I've seen one photo, but I can already picture his blindside face. So I don't know if I'm getting some sort of premonition of that, but I see that downfall coming. But I don't think it's pre-merge. I don't know.
All right. Do you think he's going to be stalled in the voting booth for so long, a la Hannah Shapiro, because he's so indecisive?
He'll definitely pull an Aubrey. Write the name, cross it out.
Yeah, he'll vote for everybody at the end of the day.
Yeah. For Joey or Phoebe or Chandler. Exactly.
All right, well, let's move on here to our second guy of the podcast. We're moving on to, I believe his real name is Francois Chapman, but you can just call him Chappies. So to start, tell us about yourself, your name, your age, your occupation, and what you like doing.
Yeah, so I'm Chappies. I'm 31 years old. I'm actually from Centurion, Gauteng, and I'm an entrepreneur. You know, on that, I'm addicted to growth in every aspect of my life. And, you know, what better way to kind of find growth than the way of the life of an entrepreneur? You know, in business, you get challenges each and every day, whether it's clients, customers, or sort of suppliers, or unforeseen stuff. You get opportunities that you did not see coming that forces you to adapt and grow. And that's me.
Why are you here on Survivor?
Wow. So, yeah, I wasn't a very big Survivor fan, you know, for a lot of my years growing up. I can remember seeing the first Survivor show, the very first American one, back in the days. You know, I think I was very small, still very young. And then when it really caught my attention was about 2 to 3 years ago. I think it was with the Survivor Philippines season 6, if I'm not mistaken. You know, then I saw that the game actually evolved to a level that I wanted to become involved in. It had really, really cool challenges that drew me to it. And I saw interesting South African people. And I immediately noticed that I've most probably got a lot of skills and I'll be able to beat 95% of all the people that I've seen so far. And, you know, the South African people playing the game. And then that caught my interest. And I was like, damn, I really want to enter this game. So then I tried and entered for season 7, you know, sending my first Survivor video ever. And I actually made it through all of the hoops right up to the end where I had an interview with the entire the crew around a round table in a boardroom. Wow. So that was very intimidating, but also still very fun. But now if I look back now, I was someone totally different then than I am now. So after they rejected me for season 7, I cried for about 3 days. Well, not literally, but, you know, you had this disappointment because you really had this expectation, you know. You started telling close families and friends that I'm going to make it now. I'm at the last step of making it onto a show. And then right at the end, they give you like a cold call and tell you, sorry, you didn't make it, your shit. Now get back doing what you were doing, you know. And then I kind of mourned for 3 days, got over it, and immediately just, you know, realized at that moment, I realized I didn't actually need a platform like Survivor in order to grow in life. And it would have been an amazing bonus to actually get it, but I didn't need it as a human being to know who I am and know where I'm going. And so I kind of put it behind me for like a little while and just focused on what was in front of me and what was building my business. And within that while, you know, the build business really grew and I started up another business. And then they announced that they're going to actually have a Survivor season 8. And I thought, this is going to be my opportunity. And then, you know, this idea brewed within me, how I'm going to send my entry video and what type of an idea I want them to have of me. And I made the entry video one night. It was one night from 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock. I had like a glass of wine, set up the camera. You know, I had the entire speech planned out ahead with some awesome background music, got the lights going, the camera going, and just recorded the video. And that was like, I knew if I ever had a chance of making it on the show, this was it. So just to answer your question short and sweet is, this is the second time I've entered Survivor. And, you know, it's going to be the first time that I'm going to win it as well. So
what's one life experience you feel has prepared you most for the game?
So there's not specifically one life experience that I would say prepared me for a game like Survivor, but it's more it's a set of life experiences. And if I had to name one or two that actually stands out, it is getting blindsided by suppliers, getting blindsided by customers, by people that you kind of try and add value to in life through your business, and they just come and screw you up. You know, being blindsided by partners, being blindsided by life itself. So I call it blindside because it comes unforeseen and in a time that you don't expect it at all, like a complete blindside. So I would say numerous aspects within the business world, obviously also numerous aspects within personal world where I had relationships in the past with ladies, you know, that you really thought you were at some level of the relationship and they kind of just pull the rug from underneath you. So it's a accumulation or combination of a few things in life, and I would kind of contribute it to those things just mentioned.
What do you think people will perceive you as?
So my first impression that people normally have of me is that I'm confident, sometimes arrogant, you know. So there's a very fine line between the confidence and arrogance. But people most of the time perceive me as a confident guy that is likable. People open up to me quite easy. I make them feel comfortable around me. I get to know people when they are with me because I find them interesting as well. But just asking questions and going a bit deeper makes them feel comfortable with me. But if I have to sum it up in one or two things, is they would perceive me as confident, as a leader. They would also perceive me as someone who is actually caring about them. You know, and those are things that I'm going to have to kind of hold back a bit on in the game. To a certain extent, because you know, you don't want to be the most likable guy and put the biggest target on your back. But yeah, I would say confident, likable leader.
Which Survivor player are you most like?
So if it was South Africa, I would say if Rob and Nicole had a kid and Jock raised the kid, that would be me.
Sorry, I have to call the steers for a second. I just want to talk about that image for a second.
Yeah, that image.
That is wild. Robin Nicole had a baby, but it was raised by Jacques.
Let's talk it through. So like an adoption kind of thing. I mean, that's beautiful. That's a beautiful story.
I'm surprised of all the people that Robin Nicole would turn their child to. I think Jacques would be at the bottom of the list. No,
there's a lot that happened in Survivor South Africa season.
There's got to be an order of succession here within the Survivor South Africa season 7 cast of who raises whose child.
Well,
I don't know if Jacques at the top there.
Anella maybe got Thanos to snap away everyone else, and Jacques is the only one left to raise the kid. No love lost, maybe. I don't see that arrangement happening, just based on their relationships. Also, Nicole is married, but I don't know. They'd have a beautiful child. They would.
They would. I mean, they would have an ungodly, gorgeous child. I'm also intrigued by the idea of Jacques as parent, though.
Why? I feel like he'd be a great parent.
Well, I think that Jacques would have a problem where he'd be like, okay, time for your bath, and he'd accidentally pour paint in the kid's hair, and then they couldn't get it out for days and days and days.
Why, because he one time put paint in his hair?
Yeah, don't you remember that when he put paint in his hair?
No, I remember.
And it stayed in his hair forever?
Yeah, but I don't think that, like, that translates to his whole life.
Do you think the kid would wear idols to school under his shirt?
Yeah, under his shirt, to try and blindside his biological parents. There's too much going on here. But that was an image.
Yeah, that's a little soapy, right? Like, oh, your biological parents are involved, but now we're going to blindside them.
There is no way that Rob and Nicole have a baby that they give to Jacques that isn't extremely soapy. Like, every part of that is a soap opera. But, okay, at least you know this guy definitely saw Survivor South Africa season 7. that we can tell you. Or did
not
he?
Only that, but, well, not only that, but he's shipping them actively. He's coming up with fan fiction, I think, during his 14-day quarantine as to having children together and people raising those children subsequently.
Also, isn't he the baby? Because it's the Survivor play he's most like. He is the baby child.
So he is the baby, yeah. He is this odd soap opera child.
Also, where is he pulling from? Because, okay, it's which Survivor you most like. I can't think of, like, three more different Survivor players.
Specifically from the same season. I think you could do, like, a pull names out of a hat thing.
Yeah.
Right? And be like, oh, I'm the child of Sarah Dawson and Jeff Wilson, but I was raised by, Lunch Lady Denise. Like, you could definitely do that.
I don't know if that's
that
much more disparate. I don't know that.
Yeah, but to go specifically with Robin Nicole, the top two finishers pulled a Robin Amber, I suppose, had a baby together.
Beautiful.
But they said, you know what? This is too much of a burden. We're going to give it to our friend Jacques.
Our friend is raise our child. Again, I don't see Jacques being into that. I don't see Robin Nicole being into that.
Unless is this like a Batman situation?
How so?
In that, listen, I'm not saying that anything bad should happen to Robin Nicole, but like,
right.
You know, to avenge them, Jacques is sort of the Alfred here, and he is raising this biological child.
Chappie is the child.
Yeah, exactly. Bat Chappies. Chapman.
Chapman, this is a great movie.
I would watch this movie any day of the week, specifically because it features Survivor South Africa. I don't know how appealing it is to anybody outside of Survivor South Africa Season 7, but we're loving it.
You can see the writers in the room. They're like, okay, Survivor South Africa Season 7 was a hit. Maybe it's LaRue. He's listening to this. We're giving him ideas. He's like, let me pitch you something. Rob and Nicole have a baby. Jacques raises the baby, and the baby is Chappie's. Boom! TV show.
Exactly. I mean, that really is a blood versus water, right? Like, move over, Brandon Hans. This is a child of two other Survivor players raised by a third Survivor player from the previous season.
Becoming a Survivor player in this season. It's too close to home. Yeah, I'm so glad that we stopped down on this for so long to play out this image that he gave us.
Yeah, no, this is by far the most arresting image I've experienced so far when it comes to specifically which Survivor player you like. So I just had to play this scenario out. I do apologize about the stop down. Let's
no,
keep
I just
want to
say that I will be rewriting the Brady Bunch theme song in my head to be about this specific scenario.
Incredible. I cannot wait for the inevitable wand off to come. All right, let's get back to Chappies.
So, you know, if it comes to an American player, I would say, you know, the guy that I idolize or, you know, whose game I love the most was Tony's in Winners at War, which was the ultimate Survivor game I've ever watched until season 8, and I was going to air, you know. But that was really, it was so cool to watch this guy having fun, first of all. Secondly, just taking risks. Because that's where the rewards lie. People don't like taking risks out there, and that's part of my daily life, you know. I failed numerous of times, but I rather kind of hit and miss something than not hit at all. But, yeah, if, you know, I hope that answers your question. If it was American guy that I would say similar, it's most probably Tony.
What do you desire in an alliance partner?
So that's a question that's going to really... the answer to that question is going to change depending on the circumstances and the pieces that I've got on the table to work with. But if I had to just kind of put it out there, what I would be looking for is I would most probably be looking for someone that's also either a valuable player physically, mentally, or socially, you know, and that would preferably be a lady. A woman. And the reason why I say that is because if you go and look in nature, people tend to group in sexes, in races, you know. So if I could, you know, if I could find a lady, which is the opposite sex, I already know I've got an in with some other alliance somewhere down the line. Or you've got an in with the ladies. You've got a node that you can get some information from the ladies, you know. And then secondly, I would look for a different race person as well to kind of join in on them because they've also got another outlook on life and they group together, you know, in some stages or in some ways, and you're going to get in on that information. So it almost
All right.
Okay. All right. Let me gather my thoughts.
Yeah, this is a big one. This is really... really interesting. I think it's worth the discussion.
Parts of that were hard to disagree with. I mean, that's why we said we want more diversity in Survivor, because people do kind of tend to go towards groups they're more familiar with, and then if there's a massive diversity imbalance, like Loku gets voted out because they're seen as other. It's the kind of thing that I understand, like, it at its core, maybe, but maybe you shouldn't say it. And maybe you shouldn't say it. Like, it was very othering, I thought. Just, and also the fact that right before that he called them pieces on the board, I was like, hey, but also humans that you're now boiling down to, like, some pretty basic factors. Again, like, it was hard to disagree with parts of it, but then I was, like, my face during it was not one of just, like, nodding agreement.
Yeah, it's a really intriguing idea because, I mean, it's not too disparate from this idea. And I know when I ask some players preseason, they often say, I want to link up with somebody who, you know, I usually wouldn't interact with in my everyday life. We just did this on Out With Out Play Out List with dynamic duos. That is often a successful but also intriguing socially concept of survivor. And sometimes that does mean working with someone from a different gender, of a different race, who you might not necessarily work with, especially in the day-to-day outside of Survivor. But I don't know if the way it was phrased was necessarily couched like that.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of actively seeking it, I'm not sure how I feel about that specifically. That more so feels like, to your point, like collect them all. You know, like, oh, I'm specifically seeking someone who checks all these boxes.
Well, like for me, I've always thought if I went on Survivor, I would do well with like an age disparity. Because even in like work, I don't know if I'm like an old soul. Like, I tend to bond with people. Like, I have a work mom who I love, you know, like that kind of age gap tends to work really well for me. I don't know. People kind of, I guess, want to parent me maybe a little bit more when I was younger. And that's like a good relationship for me. And I've always thought that. But again, with this, it just feels very specific to be like, I'm looking for that, rather than that just being like, I tend, you know, to get along, you know, to have really good dynamics with other women. I have a lot of female friends. Like, you know, maybe you can go more like that rather than like, I'm going to force relationships of people of other demographics because I see them all as chess pieces in this like very broad way. Again, we don't know this guy. Taking it at face value, it was a bit of an odd thing to say. But honestly, I guess like, thank you for being super transparent in the interview. Like, I was just thinking, I want to drink the confidence of these two men so far, like to come in and be like, I want to play like Tony. Like, everyone is referencing the best players of all time. I wish I felt I could be just like the best player of all time before I've even played.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we're going to get into more of some Chappies talking about Chappies. So strap in, Strappies in. Let's continue with Chappies.
It almost probably then, just to sum it up, to be someone that is also physically, mentally, or socially, you know, strong, preferably a lady. And then secondly, it would be someone of, you know, a different race to me.
What is the ethical or moral line for you in the game of Survivor?
Yeah, it's definitely a game for me, definitely a game. And then that's, you know, depending on what a person's answer is towards that question, is really going to depend... or is going to influence whether you're really going to play morally or not. So in my instance, I really see it as a game. There's a set of rules, and you're allowed to do things within this game that's most probably going to be frowned upon in life. But to a certain extent, everyone, you know, in life breaks some rules. They're just not always caught. You know, sometimes it's to a less degree that they break rules. In this game, you are allowed to break certain life moral rules. And I'm going to pursue that. It's not going to be my main objective, my main goal to go out, cheat, line, steal. But I'm going to say, I'm going to do anything that's needed at that specific moment to achieve the objective at hand.
Would you rather be voted out pre-merge or get zero votes at the final tribal council?
You know, if I had the opportunity to make it to the final tribal council, which is most probably going to happen, which already happened, and I got zero votes, I would be so disappointed. That would be such a disappointment. So then I would, in that case, I would rather then say the better option would be to be then voted out pre-merge, but I have such an awesome game that... you know, the guy that is then at the end of the game who did not get any votes is kind of just standing in your in the shadow of the great experience and joy you had pre-merge.
What will be the biggest component of your game? Physical, strategy, or social?
I would say my biggest strength is, if I really had to choose one of them, my biggest strength would actually be social. I really believe that my biggest strength is social. And when it comes down to the game of Survivor, 85 to 90% of the game consists out of the social game. The rest are just kind of doorways to another social game, to another social aspect. But yeah, I would say that my social game is most probably going to be the strongest, but the physical and the mental, the strategy is not far behind. So the balance of those three is going to really blast them from the beach.
What's your favorite advantage in Survivor history?
That must probably be where you have the ability to nullify, was it immunity idol or something? I think there was one season, idol nullifier. I think it was something like that. That was really, really cool, you know, because if you could play that spot on, that creates magic within that moment where, you know, this gargoyle thought they're going to kind of outwit you by playing the idol, and then you outwit them by playing the nullifier. That would be so freaking cool. But, you know, it happened some time ago. I can't remember when.
What celebrity or fictional character would you want to come out for a loved one's visit?
Obviously, that would be the guy I idolize most, and that would be Tony, you know, Tony from USA. Just because he knows what this is about. He knows that he should arrive at the family visit, he will know what I'm going through at that current stage. And he'll give me some good, clear advice that I can just take further in the game and make it right up till the end. So Mr. Tony, bald head and all, that'd be a freaking great surprise.
What food would you sit out in an immunity challenge for?
So I believe that I've got enough self-control not to kind of, you know, sit out for any type of food at that specific moment. But if I have to choose a specific type of food, it must probably be cheesecake, bottle of red wine, biltong, something peanut butter, sushi. So there's a few ones, but any one of those is going to be very tempting, but it's going to have to shout my name like loudly because I've got a lot of self-control when it comes to that.
If you could have any superpower, what would it be and why?
I would say it's quite simple. You know, it's the ability to fly. It's always been Superman is my superhero out there, and I've always dreamt of flying. When I've got my most amazing dreams, it's while I'm flying over the ocean and just, you know, conquering mountains while flying and with your fist in front of you and your body just follows your fist. So it almost probably be flying.
So it's about 24 hours before the game starts at the time you're recording this. What's going through your head as you're about to enter the game?
What's going through my mind is the fact that I should take in every moment from now on. You know, it's a few hours before we start, and I'm trying to slow down time and take in as much as I can of every moment before and in the game as well as after the game. So I'm trying to slow down my emotions, slow down my thoughts, not think about too much that could happen, because once you put your feet on the sand, a lot of things can change. And if you are living too far into the future, you're not going to see what's right in front of you. So I'm trying to kind of slow myself down and remind myself that this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I'm going to play as if it's my second time, and I'm going to work with what I've got. I've got to slow everything down, keep the exploding emotions inside just a bit, contain myself so that I just don't lose it.
All right, so there is Chappie as the entrepreneur.
Chappie's is going to be a character, definitely. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know what, I was having bigger reactions to what he was saying than with Anella.
Well, I think that's because Chappie's making such grander claims.
Grand,
right? He says,
claims.
Oh, yeah, like, oh, Tony's game is the best ever until me in Survivor South Africa Season 8.
That's what I'm saying about drinking this confidence. I want that. I want to be that person. That's what gets you cast on these shows, honestly, because, like, when you fall, it will be hard. I mean, it's improbable that we've only heard two interviews so far, and yet we have the two best Survivor players of all time already in this cast. You know, like, I think having that sense of self is an amazing thing, but might be a little tricky in Survivor. I love Tony from USA coming as his loved one. I mean, it makes sense.
But imagine Tony like, oh my God, Chappies, nice to meet you, man. I don't know what I'm doing here, but I'm having a great time.
Oh no, I've got snapped by Thanos. Bye.
Yeah, no, or could it be Tonos? Could it be Tony Thanos?
Yeah, I mean, that it kind of works as a character.
Two birds with one stone.
Yeah. Well, who would you have come out for you? Any fictional real person?
Oh, that's a really good question.
Well, you don't know? I feel like I have answered all these questions in my mind.
No, I guess it's weird. I have the thing where, like, I've asked the questions, but I have no set answer in mind. So you come out, you do yours first while I come up with mine.
Mine is Lin-Manuel Miranda, obviously. He would just pull me up. I feel like he'd know exactly what to say in that moment that I would need. Plus, that would be thrilling for me.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Probably, I would probably, because you want someone, I don't know, I want someone who is warm, but energetic at the same time.
Well, you're thinking about this a lot. I was like, I'd like to meet Lin-Manuel Miranda, or maybe if he's not available, maybe Taylor Swift. Like, just someone that
you just want an excuse to meet a celebrity.
Yeah, because then when I lose, I'll be like, well, at least I met Taylor Swift. Like, what a great time.
Yeah, mine would probably be everyone from The Simpsons.
Everyone from that's exactly like Chappie's meal. Chappie, what would you sit down for? Well, a cheesecake, and then it's like a bottle of red wine. It's like, all right, well, that goes together. But now peanut butter and sushi.
I love how he starts that off saying, my will is strong enough that I wouldn't buckle for anything. But if I did, here's a laundry list of things that I would gladly step down for.
Maybe he thinks like production is listening, which, to be fair, they're doing interviews, so they are. Maybe he just thinks like, hey, in case I ever want it, like, I just want to give you my menu, which I know is something that like Survivor players often do in confessional. Like, hey, yeah, you want me to step down?
That's what Sophie did to her loved ones, right? Mm-hmm. She remember, like, from the airport, I want you to give me peanut butter cups and a massage. Maybe that's him doing it right now. So Chappie's in his bio. He mentioned Tony, but he also invoked another Survivor player as one of his all-time favorites, David, from Australian Survivor.
Yeah, I mean, David, Tony, and Rob Bentley, the three best players of all time, the three best winning games. Sure, yeah. I mean, that's, again, tall order, Chappies. Much like in LA, you guys have just promised us the world, and you best deliver, because we will remember. No, I feel like they're both going in with a lot of confidence. It might be a rude awakening. I feel like anything other than playing the best winning game ever now will be a disappointment and a failure. So, hey, that's what they promise.
See, what I will say about Chappies, though, is yes, he does come in with an ego maybe as large as his shopping list when it comes to foods to take him out of the challenge. But at least he does acknowledge the fact that he has to be adaptable, right? Like, a lot of these questions that were asked, he said, well, I believe this, but I'm not afraid to change it given the others, especially that ethical and moral line conversation, right? He says, oh, in my opinion, it's just a game. I'm going to do whatever the hell I want. But if I come in and someone else doesn't believe that, I'm going to have to fit my game to those circumstances. And as Anella actually talked about in his interview, adaptability is one of the most key Survivor skills, especially in the modern Survivor where there's so much production throws your way. So maybe there's a chance that Chappies does come in and has to adjust his mentality a little bit given the way that everyone else plays, but that would also not make for fun TV. And Chappies, I think, is going to be very fun TV however long he lasts.
Yeah, I mean, he says he's a leader, which can often be pretty dangerous. For me, I'm seeing like big pre-merge character, but I did appreciate that he gave like pointed answers to all the questions. I think flying is a great superpower. Very much on board with that. Also, you never answered who your celebrity or fictional character would be.
I said the entire cast of The Simpsons. Right.
That doesn't count. Pick a Simpson.
Pick a Simpson. I can't just pick one Simpson. Okay, then I'm going to say Bill Hader.
He's not a Simpson.
Well, I didn't say, if I can't pick all the Simpsons, then I'm going to pick Bill Hader.
I can't pick all the Simpsons, so out of all the Simpsons characters, I want Bill Hader. Why
no,
Hader?
I love Bill Hader. Bill Hader is one of my favorite SNL cast members of all time. I feel like he can make me giddy with his impressions. I could just have him do Stefan if I'm like really in the dirges. So I feel like he would be someone to just really cheer me up at a time, because I know I'm losing that loved one's reward challenge. And maybe people would want to invite me along because they're like, oh, cool, it's Bill Hader. He'll make us laugh for the day. Let's bring him along and Michael join us.
You don't think that people would be like, oh my God, Lin-Manuel Miranda and bring me along? I feel like people would be really into that. Also, you know who they wouldn't bring? Thanos. That would be terrifying.
Well, you know what Thanos would do? He'd look at everything and he'd be like, there's not enough resources here at this barbecue. I should make half of them disappear, so we'll have enough ribs for the three of us.
Yeah, if Thanos is there, at least I guess the reward gets chosen for you. Like, whoever is left is going to the barbecue. So
yeah,
that's a nice thing. I like those answers.
One more note about Chappies. He did make a note in his bio that he has, the first thing that he packed was his orange Speedo.
That's a vision, too. A lot of images are being painted. Chappies, Robin Nicole's baby with being raised by Jacques in his orange Speedo. I feel like, you know, often when you're like listening, we're trying to get to know 20 people. And I think that when the listeners are listening to the interviews, they're going to try boil it down to like, hey, what are the couple of things I know about that person so that they can go in with that knowledge of like knowing who the cast is. And like Anella, I feel like we know wishy-washy, indecisive. That's the character type we have broadly boiled him down to. And now that's who he'll forever be. But with Chappies, I have to go with, yeah, the Rob and Nicole Shark parentage story. I don't know what was going on there, but like, how will anyone listening to that think of anything else
besides the orange Speedo, which I'm sure he's gonna, I think not since Dan Foley's Mantis will we see such prominent underwear on Survivor.
I feel like Speedos might be like a bit of a thing in South Africa. I don't want to like talk
you
for
think
South
so?
Africa. Yeah.
I feel like I would say it was brought about in Australia, but Australia is more about naked butts, not even bathing suits altogether.
Yeah, I mean, I even think like Australia is quite Speedo heavy compared to like America. I feel like do you guys use Speedos now?
Not, I feel like they do
it's
for
the best
swim
thing about
shoes,
America.
It sort of has gone out of style, I think.
I mean, it's definitely gone out of style, whether people are wearing it or not. Like, don't. Just putting it out there.
Maybe Chappies is going to bring it back. I'm surprised that he's not wearing any sort of Chappies himself. Or what is there a name of pants that's called Chappies, I think?
I don't know. Again, pants, astrology, and rugby. Really asking me about my absolute expertise here. But yeah, Chappies is going to play the best David, Rob Bentley, Tony game of all time. And then he's going to bring Speedos back. So a lot to get done. But we're gonna get it done.
All right, Shannon, let's move on to our third contestant here. And this is Dino. Dino is an escape room owner.
Cool.
So let's puzzle through Dino's interview here. So to start, tell us about yourself, your name, your age, your occupation, and what you like doing.
My name is Dino Paulo. I am 30 years old, and I own a live escape game business.
Why are you here on Survivor?
It's been a childhood dream to be on Survivor and play The Greatest Game on Earth. And I think this is just my shot at, proving to myself that I can do this. I've got what it takes.
What's your history with Survivor?
Interestingly enough, my fandom doesn't extend too far back or doesn't go over like a long period of time. I mean, I do remember watching the first season when it aired in South Africa. It aired about a year later than when it first aired in the US, you know. I do recall watching that, and I recall watching, you know, when I was much younger, I was about 11 years old when that came out. And I remember watching, Boston Rob's first season, and then obviously All Stars, you know, rolls around. And I do remember moments from those seasons from when I was young, watching that firsthand. And then I kind of strayed from Survivor for quite some time until about Survivor South Africa season 5 Champions, you know. And that's when it piqued my interest again, because I was of age to be able to audition. And it was always in the back of my mind, you know, when I was younger, I was always like, that's the one show I'd love to be on. So then I started picking up a little bit of Survivor again. And then I started consuming, you know, going out and searching, consuming more Survivor around season 6, South Africa season 6, because that's when I had my mind set up. I was definitely going to be continuously applying until I get on. And that's when I started consuming podcasts, you know, like obviously Shannon and Mike covering like season 7.
I love this guy. Is this guy winning? He's on my winner pick.
We are shameless here. If you mention us in an interview, we're going to give you some kudos.
Okay. Love Dino. Absolutely. Just wow. And what a sparkling personality, too. Just absolute winner right here. Just call the whole thing off.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he got to Survivor South Africa Champions before we did. He's ahead of the trend.
Oh, my God. This guy. I can keep going, but Dino, you're my winner pick. I love you for it. Unless someone else references us, in which case it'll be a tie.
I know, we're only 3 people into 20 and you've already declared him your favorite.
I didn't think anyone would reference us.
Of course. rewatching old seasons. I started watching like from season one forward and then from season basically at the time 37 backwards at the same time, you know. So yeah, I mean, I do remember being an early fan, but I did stray and then, you know, find my way back, I suppose.
What's one life experience you feel has prepared you most for the game?
One life experience. I have a number. Sure. There are many life experiences, I suppose, that really, really will come into play. And as I sit here and I think about it, I'm like, oh, what about that? What about that? I mean, I didn't actually study after school. I started my own businesses quite young. I built them up. I made tons and tons and tons of money. But at the same time, I lost tons and tons of money because I lost businesses and I started various businesses as well. So, you know, there was a lot of experience like in having to be so young and put yourself out there and create opportunities for yourself or through your networks. It was challenging. You know, I was supporting my entire family at the time, you know, for a period of time, you know, from the age of like 20 to 25, basically, you know. So I had those kinds of challenges and opportunities. More recently, more recent business, you know, we've also gone through some like real challenges with how do I put this diplomatically, partners that weren't so above board, you know, and having to deal with that in very particular ways. You know, there's those kinds of experiences that really kind of show as an empathetic person, somebody who loves people, when it comes down to it, I can really make the hard decisions I need to. So I think that will make a difference.
What do you think people will perceive you as?
That is so interesting. You know, like, I think at first glance, I've had a history of like maybe coming across as a bit like arrogant and unapproachable, you know, when I was like a bit younger. And I think that was because I lacked self-confidence and I lacked, you know, like, yeah, I was very, very self-conscious and I kind of built up these walls and defense mechanisms. And I think that came across, you know, and maybe at some point still come across a little bit like douchey, if I can say it like that. But as soon as you get past that, you'll see that I'm like really a fun, loving, just cheerful, optimistic, decent guy. You know, like I consider my friends and family consider me like a really nice guy. And I suppose this is like where the game comes in. It's like, well, how can you be a nice guy and play a good game? And I am a gamer and I am here to like pull moves. So I don't know. It's kind of like decent me is going to meet despicable me. You know, it's like, I don't know. So it will be interesting. And I'm very curious to see which side of me prevails.
Which Survivor player are you most like?
That is so tricky. And in my audition video, I actually, you know, for this season, I actually said, I was like, I can't put my finger on it. And I'm like, but that's the cool thing about Survivor is because every cast has its own like unique cast and it's just like a diverse group of people. And that's why we come back and we watch it for 40 seasons in the US, 7 in Australia, you know, we're going on to 8 here. It's because the people are constantly changing, you know? And I think that's key. So I can't say that I feel like I am X, Y, and Z person. I think I pick up different characteristics, you know, like I'd love to think of myself as like fun loving and, you know, the same sense of self-deprecating humor as somebody like Rick Devons, you know, because they're hugely entertaining. But I love the idea of being a schemer like Harry Hills, my boy Harry Hills, you know. So, yeah, I mean, on a combination front, I think, yeah, I mean, between those two, I'd love to like kind of find the balance and think of myself as that. But I guess we'll find out. So maybe you guys can tell me at the end of the season, like by comparison, if I'm not beat it all first.
Steers.
What do you deserve?
So it's a pet peeve of mine when people don't give a name in this question. I'm sure it's something that we'll come across, but it's like, again, the assignment is to give a name. And I was like, the first person who gives a name that isn't one of the best Survivor winners ever is going to get massive points for me.
Who doesn't give the South African version of like a Boston Rob, Parvati, etc.?
Yeah, and I love both those answers. But again, I'm like predisposed to really liking Dino. But those are two fun, kind of niche enough, even though they're both from really recent. I mean, they're from Australia and the US, and they're not three of the best winners of all time. So that points on that. Also, I just want to say, like, the fact that these bios have US and AU people on it, that's what I love about Survivor South Africa and like LaRue and this assumed knowledge. I feel like most of the South African fans are like, David Jennett, what? But they just put it out there, and like no other franchise is doing that, acknowledging that other franchises exist. So I really enjoy that.
I mean, it's because, yeah, LaRue is someone who also acknowledges and, you know, lovingly homages other franchises too. So it's greatly appreciated, especially for those of us that do indulge in so many Survivor franchises. That is, it's such an interesting pairing, Rick and Harry. But what I find that they sort of have in common is tenacity, right? Dirty Harry, the cockroach, and Rick Devins, whose entire post-merge storyline is when he's not winning immunity or finding idols, he's consistently in trouble. And so I wonder if maybe that speaks to how Dino's going to view himself, right? That he's scrappy AF. So if he does end up in that underdog position, he's going to fight tooth and nail to get ahead.
Yeah, I think that they definitely share that in common. And it sounds like he's like the first one who's been like, I have actual weaknesses. Like I'm a human being and not a god. So I feel like him just offering that up, maybe he knows that it maybe won't be a perfect game. He maybe will not have the numbers at points, but hopefully he can fight back from that to not win, but get very close. And I appreciate him not just, like, assuming he'll play the best game of all time. Anyway, we can continue.
What do you desire in an alliance partner?
That is so interesting that you asked that question, because I haven't thought about, you know, what would I want out of X, Y, and Z person or X, Y, and Z group, because I'm very much... I consider myself to be quite adaptable, and... You know, I don't want to narrow myself into a, you need to see X, Y, and Z before making X, Y, and Z move, because then you start missing the opportunities that are around you, and you box yourself into a corner, you know. In an ideal world, you know, to have something going like, I actually had a good chat with Luke Toki before coming out here, and he was like, yo, I'll find your boy.
Yeah, we got to steer that. Dino talked with Luke before coming out to play Survivor.
Dino is just absolutely... just dropping bombs at the moment. Like, what?
Yeah.
I was just chatting to Luke Toki and just, yeah.
Just the casual name drop of, yeah, I was talking with one of the most popular Survivor Australian Survivor players of all time, and he gave me some advice about what to do.
What?
It's ridiculous. But don't worry, Shannon, this will not be the last name that he drops over the course of this podcast.
Oh my gosh, I'm loving not knowing. It's so fun just hearing it in the moment. Anyway, I love this guy.
Boy and or girl and stick with him throughout, you know, a little relationship like Luke and Dave had, damn, that would be so cool, you know, to go out there and have the best time, you know, like they're both skillful players, they're strategy driven, they're loyal to each other, and they just had like the most fun. So in an ideal world, if I could pick something like that and it worked, she's somebody that would be willing to play hard and just enjoy it, you know, while it lasts, because it can come to an end at any time, you know. So yeah, be looking for that.
What is the ethical or moral line for you in the game of Survivor?
In the real world, I mean, I've crossed moral and ethical lines, and you know, when I was a bit younger to try get a start on life, but now I'm like far more down the line as a human being. But the way I see this, and the way I've always seen Survivor, is that it's a game, you know, and when I play board games or any sort of game with my friends and my family, like, they end up hating me, and I'm like, because I'll do anything to win, and I will badger you, and I'll agitate, and I'll, you know, cross lines that they have that I don't have, you know, I don't have a filter, so, and Survivor's a bigger version of that, and I think you'll get a lot more connected with people, and you're isolated, so you do form bonds, and it is a lot more difficult than what it seems, you know. It's easy to sit at home and go like, backstab, da, da, da. But you know, like Tony Vlachos in Kaguya, and he was like swearing on his bed, swearing on his wife, swearing on his child, you know, like, I'm like, well, do it, whatever, you know, whatever flies. If that doesn't mean anything to you as a player and it doesn't mean anything to me, like, I will go ahead and do that. The fact that it means something to somebody else, that's their problem. So I don't really think I have a line.
Would you rather be voted out pre-merge or get zero votes at the final tribal council?
So Jacques Berger and myself, again, another player I chatted to before coming out to get some insight. Love him to bits.
Steers. He also talked to Jock.
I mean, the betrayal to talk to Chappie's adoptive dad before coming out to play against Chappie's, like, it's already...
To be fair, he doesn't know he's going to be playing with Jacques' adopted and Robin Nicole's biological son. You know, I don't think Jacques... Poor on Jacques for not tipping him off about that beforehand.
Yeah, that really is on Jacques. I mean, I guess this one is a little bit more... This one I can see more... Like, Luke was just so out of left field. Jacques, I love that he's, you know, putting in the research to talk to people, but Jacques is, like, a fellow South African super fan, probably in the community, so I understand that feels like a more natural connection. But this guy was absolutely all over the place. I'm surprised he didn't reach out to us. I'm kind of offended.
Well, so you know Luke infinitely better than I do. I mean, what is this surprising of him? Because Jacques, I totally agree, would be the type of person to be able to dispense advice beforehand. But I feel like Luke could go either way if you ask him for advice preseason.
I mean, Luke is a nice guy. Like if you ask Luke a favor, like, he will do you that favor. I just, like, he's a big deal. He's got a lot of Instagram followers. Like, this guy obviously, like, broke through the noise and got through to him. And at that point, I do feel like Luke would help out. But how many people would, like, think to do that? I wouldn't.
Yeah, so let's see what Jacques told Dino in one of the many pieces of research Dino did preseason.
We actually chatted about this, and it's like, you know, there's a part of me that would rather go out, play super hard like Seamus did season 6 and be voted out first. And, you know, okay, fine, you didn't get to leave your mark on the entire game. But I think the idea that you get to final tribal council and you get 0 votes, it means that you didn't play the game, you know. And what am I here to do, realistically? I'm here to play the game. So, yeah, I mean, who's a good pre-merge boot to compare to? But, like, I'd be... If I left my mark in the game and I made an impact, I'd rather then go pre-merge and be able to put my hat in the ring for a future season than get to final tribal, 0 votes, not memorable other than, you know, being the classic goat. I'd like to make an impact, and I'd like to think that I played hard, and if anything, that's why I went early.
What will be the biggest component of your game? Physical, strategy, or social?
I can tell you, if it was a purely physical game, I would not be here and get my ass kicked week in, week out, so I wouldn't bother. It's definitely, I know you've just asked me to divide up, but it's a combination of strategy and social. But if I had to pick one, I'd say social, because from a strategic point, I mean, we can all do some level of math. We can all come up with these ideas, particularly from our couches in the comfort of our own homes, and go like, oh, well, if you have 2 votes here and 1 here and you play this island at this right time, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's easy to do those maths and go like, oh, that's a big move, you know, but it means nothing if you don't have the buy-in from tribe mates. And this is something that I actually said to Hundry recently, where I said, like, the way I see it is you never have control over the game. You might have control over an element, like you have your own idol or your own advantage, but you'll only ever have influence in the game, and it's through that influence, which is actually the social side of it, that you can affect the game. And, you know, that influence is going to change throughout the game, you know, and you've just got to work it, you know, from whatever position you're in. So I would definitely say, if I had to pick one to focus on, and it has been something I've considered, it's definitely the social side.
What's your favorite advantage in Survivor history?
If I'm going to think more recently and more practically, I actually love the idea, and I suspect it might come up this season, but I love the idea and the use of the idol nullifier, you know, like from David vs. Goliath. I wasn't such a big fan the way and the time it was introduced in Island of the Idols, because I thought, you know, at that stage it was a little bit late in the game and it took less skill to play it. But the idol nullifier is like, it's so cool because you need to know what the other side's thinking and when they're going to play it, and you know, it's pivotal, it's huge, it's game changing, and it's effectively, it's got the same power as a hidden immunity idol, but I think it's a bit more technical to play. And the guys on 37 did it amazingly. So, I mean, is it like a favorite, and is it like so wow, and like, does it create like this whole, is it like a showman's kind of thing? Maybe not, but I think from a technical point, I think it's a really, really cool advantage.
What celebrity or fictional character would you want to come out for a loved one's visit?
For a loved one's visit. Oh, dude. First thing, when you started saying celebrity or fictional character, I was just thinking of Zoolander, because, our sense of humor. I love crappy comedy that I think is amazing. You know, like, slapstick is cool. Yeah, I suppose like an emotional side, I'd say Moana, because, you know, that's still got a tie to my girlfriend and I, you know, and I'd be missing her and that would make me bawl my eyes out. I'm a crier, by the way. I cried everything.
Steve.
I mean, from an emotional side.
Wait, Moana, like Disney Princess Moana?
Yeah, I'm assuming it's a sort of a connection that he has with his girlfriend.
No, I mean, I totally, like, I love Moana. Did this guy just get a list of answers that would appeal to me, or?
Yeah, that's the thing, Shannon. That's why he went to Luke, is because he knows you. And so he's like, well, give me some answers for my bio that Shannon would like.
No, I mean, I looked it up on Twitter, and assuming it's the same Dino, I'm pretty sure he is on Twitter and then he follows us. So maybe he just, like, gleaned who I am based on, like, the enormous amount of myself I put out to the universe. Or maybe he just really likes Moana. But love that. I mean, Moana would be great because she know what you know. She could see how far you'll go. She could push you to that. Yeah,
exactly. And she'll dominate in any sort of water challenge, right? She's not going to be a Reed Donaldson and totally bungle it. I also like Zoolander as well. I would love to see him like, Derek, come on out, and you see him strut out like, hello, you know, it's me.
Yeah, I don't think.
But I think unfortunately, if there's an obstacle course, like, all right, like guiding him blindfolded, like, okay, Derek, turn left. That's just your game sunk then. You're not going to be winning that challenge.
Yeah. Okay. More from Dino.
From an emotional side, yeah, let's throw Moana in there. How far I'll go, play that song, I'm dead for days. A little bit of fun, you know, like a Zoolander would be funny, you know, to hang out with. Or actually, you know what? Forget about the character. I think just as a person, you know, like a Will Ferrell would be cool, because the guy's funny, man. Or like a Seth Rogen, even. I don't know. Yeah, anyone funny to bring a bit of humor to the camp, that would be awesome. That would actually be pretty cool.
What food would you sit out an immunity challenge for?
Listen, if it's going to be an endurance challenge, I will sit out for any morsel, because there's no ways I'm going to win an endurance challenge, not in my physical condition. And it's so easy to say from here or from your couch. It's like, I don't think I'd give up a shot at immunity. And the way I see my game going, I think I would potentially be at risk at a number of times. So I don't think I would, I hope I wouldn't afford myself the luxury of being able to do that from an immunity challenge. And I love my food. Trust me, I'm coming in here like the heaviest I've ever been, you know, so I do enjoy my food. But, hit me with, like, maybe an advantage and I'd consider sitting out, or, like, probably then a letter from home. Those are the kinds of things that would really pull at my, like, heartstrings and make me consider. But food, I mean, they're never going to let you starve and die out there. So I think I'd pass. Famous last words. We'll see. Hopefully I get that far and we can find out.
If you could have any superpower, what would it be and why?
Is this for survival or just life in general? Well, survival, I mean, it would be great, because we always talk about, hindsight, you know, so it'd be great to be able to see into the future. That would be pretty cool. Or read people's minds. It'd be like practical for obvious reasons. From a real life term, flying. That would be rad. You know, I skydive, so like that's my thing. I really enjoy that. It's the closest thing to like flying. I mean, it's free falling, or as Woody would say, it's falling with style, you know, like I think flight in real life context would be pretty awesome.
So it's about 24 hours before the game starts at the time you're recording this. What's going through your head as you're about to enter the game?
Not what I thought would be, you know, because I think this lockdown period's been quite harsh. I don't know if we can say, but it's been it will have been exactly 2 weeks that we've been in isolation, essentially. So that initial like nervous feeling and uncertainty has kind of like subsided. You know, I've kind of gotten comfortable in this bubble, and I've done like any prep that I wanted to do, and I'm feeling pretty relaxed. I think the main thing that I'm kind of thinking of is like time is taking like a long time to pass. Like this last 24 hours is going really slowly, so I'm just trying to figure out how to get that time to pass without getting stuck in my own head. And I'm really just trying to hammer it in, like, don't go out there and try too hard, just be yourself. Like, I tend to make friends, you know, I enjoy people, so, you know, let that come out naturally, don't force it. Those are really the things that are going through. And then you know, at the same time, I'm going like, do we get a phone call home before we start the game? That would be nice, but I don't think that's happening. So I'm trying to like detach myself from family and friends and girlfriend, which is hard. But it's a couple of things. It's cool. It's exciting, though. I must say, it's like, it is super exciting. It comes in waves. It really does. So yeah, the short answer, I don't know. A lot of things.
And that is Dino.
See, now we're in trouble because now I'm invested.
Oh, no.
And I have hopes that I don't want to be dashed. And now I remember what it's like to watch Survivor.
Do you have hopes or Moana hopes?
Moana hopes?
Yeah, it's a pun on the last name and him talking about Moana.
What's her last name? Oh, Moana Hope. That is not the Mo Hope that I think of when I think Moana. So I put that out of my head and you brought it back. Thank you for that. Look, I love Dino. I don't know what else to say. He's exactly the exact kind of archetype that I love every single time. I'm a boring person like that. It was actually funny with like the sequester game. And I remember on one screen that was like Nick, Steven, Dylan from Survivor New Zealand, and Jacques. And I was like, these are my best friends from like all the franchises. Why are they the exact same iteration of each other except from different countries?
You have a type.
Yeah. And Dino is that person. I think he would know that too. So Dino, next time I'm in Joburg, I'll see you at your escape room because I'm coming. And also I want to say, I hope he's the best performing escape room owner because we've only had one. She was the first boot in Australian Survivor. Mm. And I hope he can do better than that.
Yeah, hopefully she'll outperform. What was it, Joe, her name was?
Joan,
I was close. But I mean, to your point, Dino does at least describe himself a bit different from the usual Shannon Gus archetype. He describes himself, according to his bio, as a goofy, competitive, and often loud man-child full of love who just wants to be friends with everyone. And that does actually scream very much Will Ferrell to me, right? The person that he ultimately decided to bring out for the loved ones visit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to, like, again, we're casting all these people into pretty narrow boxes based on not a lot of information. I'm sure he has, you know, his own personality and uniqueness that he will bring to it, as all of those players that I described do. I just feel like I'm just seeing my life right now. Also, Mike, you are that person, so our friendship as well. I feel like I find my people, and I very much cling to them, but look, I'm excited about it. He seems to feel like he has physical limitations. I hope that doesn't hurt him in the pre-merge. He's my winner pick, that's it.
Wow. Well, I mean, we're assuming he's going to be the designated puzzle guy, right? Like, I don't know if he has intentions about lying about his career, but it's very clear given his career path. Again, it might not happen. We saw that with Joan, but that he would be someone to go to in terms of just thinking through puzzles. I know he said in his bio that he practiced a bunch of different Survivor puzzles, David Wright style. So I think from that perspective, he might have more utility. Again, somebody like Jacques really came in handy there for a certain portion of time when looking at him physically, you might not necessarily think he'd actually go that far, to quote Moana, not Moana Hope. I think that Dino sort of has that out.
Yeah, I mean, the puzzle thing I think is what killed Joan, right? Because she screwed up in the puzzle and then they got rid of her. So if you're going to...
It's sort of like, yeah, if you're not good for puzzles, what are you good for?
Yeah, if you're going to stand up as the escape room owner, you better be damn good at puzzles. And you have to deliver on that. You have to show your worth. So fingers crossed. I mean, that's what I said to Nick, like when he was going out to All Stars and he had to deliver as the puzzle guy. And I was like, you just have to do that. Like, you have to be so useful to them in that way. Like, you can't screw up. That's it. So hopefully he's great in the puzzles. It gets him through a pre-merge and then he wins the game.
Well, Dino, unlike Nick, Dino did not consult with me as to what puzzles needed to be taken care of to win challenges. So we'll see. We'll see how much he has in common with Nick there. I also want to bring up, I really, really, really like the quote that Dino provided of, you'll never have control over the game, only influence. I think those two ideas are so different, yet the same, two sides of the same coin, almost, that there's very little you have control over, especially, again, with all these production elements being thrown your way. But you are able to influence to a certain extent. And I think walking in with that mind frame is extremely valuable. Where if and when you do fall out of power, you still have this idea of, well, I can still influence, even if I don't have control.
Yeah. No, he said a lot of good things. I'm into it. Mike, what would your superpower be?
I think teleportation for
me.
Okay, cool. I want to be a hero Nakamura. I want to be able to just like teleport anything in a blink of an eye. As much as I do enjoy transit, especially when it comes to like having some time to myself, listening to podcasts, etc., I do just think it's really tough to pass up the ability to just appear wherever you want to be.
Mine would also be teleportation, obviously, with so many people around the world that I, like, can't see, that I love, present company included. I remember one, like, Peter and I were speaking about this probably in, like, the first year we were dating. We were long distance for 5 years. He's like, what superpower would you want? I was like, teleportation. Obviously, then we could, you know, be together more often. And he said, the ability to freeze things. We were in a long distance relationship. I never let him forget that.
That is at least number 10, I think, on the list of it's most popular superpowers.
Right? It's so bad. It's so bad. As long as, like, my body is really cold, I kind of feel like I can kind of freeze things. Like, Riddler's got really cold hands, I think, because I'm iron deficient. So I was like, that's barely even a superpower. Terrible choice. Yeah.
Well, maybe it's just because it's so hot in Australia for most of the year that he just wants the ability to have basically in-home air conditioning whenever he wants to.
We have air conditioning, though.
Yeah, but you want, like, individual air conditioning.
Don't try and defend it, Mike. It was a terrible answer, and I've never gotten over it. It's been 7 years.
Good luck to any of the remaining 16 contestants who say that, or 17 contestants who say that freezing would be their superpower. You're going to be on Shannon's no-fly list, quite literally.
I mean, especially if you have a long-distance girlfriend, and especially if that long-distance girlfriend is me. But even so, I don't think it's a good superpower.
That'd be a very specific situation.
Yeah, but it was pretty niche. Should we move on?
Yeah, let's move on to Jason. So Jason is an engineering draftsman, but if we listen to his interview, he fancies himself a lot more. I'll let him talk about it. So to start, tell us about yourself, your name, your age, your occupation, and what you like doing.
My name is Jason Brookstein. Jason Luke Brookstein. My second name's Luke, for those guys who want to know. I'm an unusual person. I'm a pigeon racer, bonsai collector. I make bonsais myself, a beekeeper. I have a farm at home. Anything animal related, I'm going to have them. So, yeah, I'm a huge animal person. I like the outdoors, yeah.
Why are you here on Survivor?
I need to prove a lot of people wrong. So, I mean, in life, I mean, there's always people like dragging you down and telling you can't do things. And I've been having that my whole life. I mean, even in my family circle. So, yeah, so it's I want to prove those people wrong. I mean, I've been watching the show since at a young age. I mean, one of the earliest memories that I have of Survivor is, I think it was back in like 2002, where I couldn't watch the reunion because it was past my bedtime, and I remember going to bed and crying because my mom wouldn't allow me to watch the reunion. And I think that's when the bug actually bit me. And everyone's been telling me, my lifestyle reflects what I should be on Survivor. And I was like, yeah, it's always been in the back of my head. And when the opportunity came, I was like, let me try this out. And always got, like, rejected, but that's just not me. I don't give up. So when I got rejected, I tried again and then again. So that's, I'm here. So I'm gonna make counts. I'm gonna leave it all on the field, so to speak. And I'm gonna do well. Prove all those people that said I couldn't do anything wrong, anything right. So I'm gonna prove them wrong.
What's one life experience you feel has prepared you most for the game?
That's vague because there's actually quite a lot. I think everyone in my life has contributed to my thinking. Even if it were, the guy at the petrol station giving me like a life lesson, I don't take those things for granted. I mean, I am a person that absorbs everything from people, and I appreciate people because I think people are very delicate, and just one saying or one phrase or something can change a person's thinking of how they look at life. So I think there's a lot of people I would like to say thank you to. A lot of people, yeah. And I hope I make them proud, and yeah.
What do you think people will perceive you as?
I think they're going to call me the Wild Man or, Tarzan or I've been called Mowgli, Tarzan, yeah, just, Bear Grylls. Weird, yeah, I try and stay away from those things because I want to be my own person. I want to be Jason. And I'm the outdoorsman.
Which Survivor player are you most like?
I would say I'm most likely like Joe Anglim or Aussie Lust if they could do a fusion dance of Dragon Ball Z or Pizarro earrings and those two fused.
The version of Joe Angle that he watched on TV would be. That's what he means.
Yeah,
right?
Remember, yeah. This is like mid-2020s Joe Anglin. I think Jason would very easily take that answer back in 2021. But I think also, based on this answer and the past answer that he gave before that question, you don't even need to see a picture of Jason to know what he looks like. He's got the long hair.
Yeah, no, I think that, this is a type. This isn't the type that I tend to become best friends with, but it is also a type. And I guess it is pretty self-aware that those would be the people that he would say he's most similar to.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. So we shall see. I mean, I feel like those are also two very different people in and of itself. Though I think he's very perceptive in how he's coming across, right? Like a little bit of that jungle boy. Mm. So it'll be interesting to see if he steers into that, not to use our word to come in and out of these interviews, or if more so he's, like you said before, like, I want to be my own person. I don't want to be the guy climbing trees to get coconuts.
Mm, we'll see.
All right, let's keep going with Jason.
So, with a hint of Tony Vlachos, I dig his playing, his approach to the game. But most likely, if I could fuse Joe Anglin and Aussie Lust together, I think that would be me, a unique player, best of both worlds.
What do you desire in an alliance partner?
In an alliance partner, I would look for. I know trust is hard to come by on this adventure, but I think trying to forge something genuine, understanding, like I said, I come from, I've been exposed to all walks of life, so I can be genuine. I know I can be serious when I need to be. I know the cutthroat psyche that a champion needs to have. I've been there. I've done well in so many things, pigeon racing, shooting, bonsais, whatever. Whatever I take on, I know, I know those type of people, and I know I'm going to run into those people, but I also know I'm exposed to the soft side, the vulnerable side of people. So I need to establish a genuine bond. And I think I would be pretty good at identifying the bull in people. So yeah, so I think I would look for a genuine personality, someone who is open to me, so I could be open to them. And I think I need to latch on something like that. It's sort of an emotional alarm, because if someone is trying to set up something or against me, I would try and set up multiple of these emotional alarms, alarm people. So if something goes wrong, it could maybe give me a little bit of a hint of what's going to happen. Okay. Something like that.
What is Steers? Shannon, I just wanted to get your thoughts midway.
It sounded like you had said, what is Steers? And I was confused by that.
I was playing a game of Jeopardy in the middle of this podcast. I hope you don't mind. What are your thoughts about this idea of emotional alarms that Jason threw out there?
I mean, I think it's interesting because I feel like I have pigeon race holed him into this idea of the jungle boy. And there's often not a lot of emotionality to that, maybe, or maybe at least for Joe and Aussie, variations of Aussie.
Aussie had emotions, they were just more so romantic.
Yeah, but even definitely Cook Islands Aussie, he was just the prototypical jungle boy, so I feel like I don't take it to that emotional place. I'm glad that he's going there.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea, right? He talks about in his bio actually how he wants to take vulnerabilities and basically use them to his advantage. So I think he's got maybe, if we're comparing the long haired guys, maybe it's a little bit more Malcolm in that perspective, right? Where he's looking more so towards the game than those others, which I think were more concentrated on challenges and camp life, especially in their initial iterations.
Yeah, I mean, Malcolm isn't the jungle boy. He just had long hair.
Yeah, that's the problem. He cosmetically looked like the Jungle Boy, even though he did not necessarily have the skills, to his own admittance.
Malcolm is more the Jacques, Jacques also had long hair. Malcolm is more, I think, that, super fan. He's a lot cooler, I think, not to, insult all my best friends, but he was more of that strategist, whereas, I do feel like Jason is going to be pretty transparently that, provider, climbing coconut trees kind of guy. He's hoping that's not all that he is, but I do think, at least from this interview, it does feel like that is his archetype.
All right, let's go back to Jason here. Is the ethical or moral line for you in the game of Survivor?
I think you just got to be true to yourself. You need to be aware of all these dilemmas and that's getting and all these curveballs that have been thrown at you, because if you can't identify these curveballs, it's gonna tear you apart. So I would say just being true to yourself, being observant, and just leaving everything behind you. Just you're in the game to be, the sole survivor. I've come here for that purpose. So I intend to do that. So, yeah.
What will be the biggest component of your game? Physical, strategy, or social?
I would think my social side, because, like I say, I'm different to people. I think it's going to be hard to connect to some personalities on the island. But like I said, I've been exposed to all walks of life. So I think I can form genuine relationships and manipulate relationships in my favor where it will benefit me. But I think the social parts out of the three categories, maybe, yeah. I come across as playful, and people kind of don't like that or give them a bad impression of me, but I'm just a playful person. I'm a joyful person. So yes, maybe people will paint me as a clown or whatever, but that's just who I am. Maybe they won't like that, but yeah.
What's your favorite advantage in Survivor history?
I dig the super idols. I dig the super idols, the idols that can be played after the votes have been read. So yeah, I would like to see if I can do something with that.
What food would you sit out in an immunity challenge for?
Oh, biltong. I dig my biltong or meerbos. I like little meerbos fruits or China fruits. I love China fruit. I think actually China fruit, biltong or meerbos. Yeah. Meerbos is like a dried fruit, peach, salted, sweet combination. It's just a whole lot of flavors. It's like a toffee, like a taffy, if I could compare it to like an American sweet. I've been to America, so I think it's something like on the lines of taffy or toffee. But it's like everything in your mouth. It's like sweet, salty, fruity. It's just one huge like explosion of flavor in your mouth. Yeah,
cheers.
I dig it.
Cheers.
It would make me buckle.
Yeah, so Shannon,
I feel like they're gonna have that, just putting it out there.
I don't know, they might splurge again if they're giving out the list and they have a little bit of time here on lockdown. I'll admit I never had heard about this before, so I'm glad that Jason explained it.
I just feel like, look, if they're giving out their perfect menu, they can say what they want. I just wouldn't have the highest hopes of that extremely specific thing is going to be what they offer, but maybe.
No. I mean, most likely. I mean, biltong has become a staple of Survivor SA, but I mean, maybe that means he's not getting down from an endurance challenge anytime soon. Maybe that's the trick.
Yeah.
To answer this question, you set things like, oh, I'll have foie gras and caviar. That's the only thing I'll step down for, and you know that they won't bring it out, so you'll have to win as a resort.
Then you also know how much production was, like, using these answers. Like, if you were to give something just so out of left field and then they offer it, you're like, all right, I can play you guys, because clearly you're listening, and it's important.
A very specific one, like, oh, I'll have a steak, but only if the flag of Belgium is sticking out of it, and on the side is this particular horseradish from this one store that's found in Johannesburg. Like, if they go through all that, then you know, okay, I set the trap, and they took it.
Yeah, I want my mom's chocolate chip cookies. That's it. You call her, you get her to make me a batch of cookies, she'll mail the cookies, I want the cookies.
Or that could be a loved one's visit thing of like, hey, I know you're here right now. Could you do us a favor and go to Ponderosa and whip up a batch of cookies for the next challenge?
My mom would do that. She definitely would. My mom would smuggle cookies in, I'm pretty sure.
Waste not, want not. If you're bringing them in, you know, might as well put them to work for a brief second.
I have my poor mom coming to visit me on Survivor, and then I send her to Ponderosa to make cookies. I mean, I would do it. I just don't think it's the right thing to do.
Well, you wouldn't do it as a player, I don't think. You're saying, no, mom, go to Ponderosa and make cookies,
I would
please.
Do that. I would do it. My mom would go. I'm saying she would go.
Your mom is a saint. All right, let's finish up here for the last few minutes with Jason.
Well, that's like my guilty pleasure that I like buying on the side when no one's looking in my car. Lots of rappers.
If you could have any superpower, what would it be and why?
Instant transmission. Goku, I could like travel anywhere in the world. That would be awesome if I could, cars and airplane rides or, you know, flights or whatever, it would become obsolete because, I mean, I could just anywhere in the world, yeah. I think that would be one of those things I would want, yeah.
What celebrity or fictional character would you want to come out for a loved one's visit?
Fictional character, definitely Goku or Vegeta, because I think a lot of my personality, like, I mean, I grew up with the guys, so, you know, so I love DBZ, and I think like the goofiness and the seriousness that Goku can, like, you know, can take on, or the roles, like, you know, when it's time to be serious, he is serious and he gets the job done and he pushes it and he doesn't give up. I think that's it sounds weird, but like a life lesson that this cartoon has instilled in me. And Vegeta, you know, the hardcore, like, you know, prideful, you know, that's, and that's also, I didn't really think about it until you asked me this question, but, you know, like those type of things, like, actually, I can see some of those attributes in me. So if for fictional character, yeah, I would probably choose one of them. But otherwise, yeah, probably Robert Downey Jr. He's pretty cool. Yeah, I think we could kick him back. Or Johnny Depp, yeah. One of those two.
So now we've got Robert Downey Jr. and Thanos there. This feels like a fight.
Oh, this is an awkward situation. I got to say, I love how much Jason loves Dragon Ball Z.
Like,
he is warming my heart so much. This is a show that was seminal to my childhood. I actually just talked
too,
about it with Taron Armstrong like 5 years. Really? I didn't realize
I mean, I don't remember anything about Dragon Ball Z other than like the main things. I watched it a ton as a kid. It was like an obsession of mine.
But I love it. I love that Jason's still taking it now, that he is like wanting to, he accidentally like backed his way into talking about Goku and Vegeta as inspirations in the game, let alone people to bring out as his loved ones. He took it. He took our answer of you know, instant transmission essentially is teleportation that Goku got to do. So I am all for this. You know, Chappies may have the orange Speedo, but hopefully Jason comes out with the full orange Goku outfit.
Yeah, it's like, you know, those recent memes where it's like it has like a bracket around one part and then a little tiny bracket around the last part. It's really hard to describe when you can't do it visually, but that's what this interview is. It's like regular interview, and then the little last bracket is like Dragon Ball Z, which this whole interview has taken a turn to be about, which I'm here for.
All right, well, let's get into the thrilling conclusion of Jason's interview.
One of those two. One of those two.
So it's about 24 hours before the game starts at the time you're recording this. What's going through your head as you're about to enter the game?
Oh, so much. Hey. I just need to revisit the mindset that... got me into this position. And the lockdown has been hard. And you see, like, I'm an outdoors person. I don't like being indoors. So it was not a tough time, but like a lot of time for me to reflect. And I think a lot of that got lost. So I think I need to just gather my thoughts and, you know, collect myself before I hit this adventure. So it gave me a lot of time to revisit memories and why I'm here. What am I playing for? There's a bigger picture for me being here. So obviously, yeah, just revisiting those thoughts, that trail of thought that got me here.
Is there anything else you want to mention about yourself before you begin the adventure of a lifetime?
Okay, yeah, thanks so much. Yeah, hopefully next time you see me is with R1 million, and with R1 million, I tend to buy lots of pigeons and bonsais and animals. So yeah, so come visit my zoo, all the survivor lovers.
I don't think we've ever had an interview end, Shannon, with someone saying, come visit my zoo, survivor lovers.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've discussed keep evolving as the closer to the podcast, but I'm really tempted to end every podcast on. All right, that's it. Come visit my zoo, survivor lovers. The perfect
So time. I'm very intrigued by this, because does that imply that he's going to use the R1 million to like invest in? Is he going to pull a Matt Damon and buy a zoo, essentially convert his farm into a zoo?
I think he's saying his farm is pretty much at that place. I think it's like a largely a pigeon zoo, which he was enterprising enough to plug his business. I shouldn't try and cut it down in this portion of the podcast. I mean, that sounds kind of interesting. I told Dino that I would see him in his escape room. Pigeon zoo, little less keen on. But you know what? If I'm in Joburg, what else am I doing? I'll come stop by.
But what if he specifically brands it as the Survivor Pigeon Zoo?
The Survivor Pigeon Zoo.
Like you build little shelters for the pigeons. The pigeons run in challenges.
Well, he keeps saying pigeon racing, and I don't know what it is, and I don't want to Google it. So if it's someone DM me the details.
No, I don't. I do not think it's like cockfighting. If that's what you're playing.
Okay. Good. Okay, good, because that was like my one real like moment of pause with
Jason. It's basically what it looks like. It basically just looks like there is it's basically like the sport where you release homing pigeons, and basically it's like, oh, the one to cover this specific amount of distance in the shortest amount of time wins.
Right. And that's not cruel?
I mean, I think the pigeons are trained at this point, so it's
maybe something like hamsters.
Flying hamsters. Hamsters with wings. I'm sure Jason loves that description for his pigeons.
Oh, my God, we've done so bad at plugging the zoo. Okay, I'm
but
sorry,
I love
Jason.
That. I mean, listen, if Dural could buy a million bananas with a million rand, I think that Jason investing in his Survivor Pigeon Zoo is not out of the ordinary.
Never forget the not short discussion we had about whether Dural was buying them all at once or over many years if he had bought a million rand worth of bananas. So, look, Jason... He seems like an interesting character. He has like a fun kind of playful energy about him. You get it. As we've said, you could picture it. It comes through in the interview. He does seem more self-aware than just these like physical jungle boy guys. So I feel it. I think it's a good character.
Yeah, I'm penciling in Jason for the merge right now, because I don't really see. Yes, he said he's a bit of an oddball, and in his bio, he basically says, "I'm the long lost brother of Tarzan. Expect tree swinging, confused facial expressions, and glorious hair flips." But that being said, that doesn't really necessarily sound like someone you have to get rid of immediately. And then once he hits the merge, I could see him absolutely throwing in like a little bit of P-Chaos into the equation and just deciding to make that heel turn and be like, okay, I'm done being Jungle Boy now. I've got a pigeon zoo to fund. Let's sort of turn on the nitrous oxide here. So I'm
serious. It's about pigeon zoos.
Yeah, I think that, you know, and then he also wrote in his bio, the first thing he packed for the game was his hair elastics. And he said one of his greatest weaknesses is barbershops. So it's very clear his hair means a lot to him.
He better have packed a lot, because those things go missing like crazy. Like, I don't even know where they go.
Is there a natural remedy for that? Could you use like twine as a hair tie on Survivor?
You could cut off like a little bit of like t-shirt and use that material.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, you could use like part of the elastic. Yeah, maybe that could work.
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously allowed to bring hair ties, though. Like, that would be cruel and unfair.
I think that's one of those creature comforts that they're allowed, yeah.
That's clothes. Okay, shall we move on?
Yeah, we've got one left here. One more for this round out of the first five, and this is Kieran. Kieran is a strategy consultant, and let's see how that'll translate to his strategy on Survivor. So to start, tell us about yourself, your name, your age, your occupation, and what you like doing.
I'm Kieran Naidu. I'm 28. I'm from Johannesburg, and I'm a strategy consultant.
Why are you here on Survivor?
I love the game. I absolutely love the game. I've been watching it since I was about 9, and I started off watching because I love the challenges, and it's morphed into a love for just the mind games and just the human behavior and social aspect of it.
What's your history with Survivor?
I definitely think I'm more than a fan. I'm not sure if I meet the criteria for a super fan. A lot of super fans would be angry to know I haven't watched every single season.
Steve.
All the seasons I have.
Thank you for knowing me. Thank you. You get so many points for that here, and you're right. I'm petty. I don't have much in my life. I'm judgmental. And yeah, I'm going to judge if you say you're a super fan if you really are. So thank you so much for acknowledging that. In truth, I know I'm sounding sarcastic, but in truth... Thank you. Just wanted to say thank you.
But all the seasons I have watched, I study them deeply, and I have a deep fascination for the motives behind why people do what they do, and especially being physically and mentally drained, how that changes people's thinking from what they would normally do. So yeah, I'd say I'm a massive fan.
What's one life experience you feel has prepared you most for the game?
So I think being a strategy consultant definitely would have prepared me a lot for the game. The job basically is taking in your client's world of issues and problems and breaking it down from very complex things into really simple bite-sized chunks that you need to convince them what the right way forward is. And that really will help me on the in the game, where you just are faced with new information all the time, and being able to know what's important from what's not, and really just drown out the noise is going to help me a ton. So I plan to constantly remind myself to just take a bit of extra time to think about things, because I'm not working on the same brain capacity as I am normally. Yeah.
What do you think people will perceive you as?
You know, I've thought about this quite a bit. I think at first people will think of me as, I'm hoping, as a lovable idiot. I like to talk. I like to be out there and be funny. So I'm definitely going to lean into that. As the game gets on, I definitely think they'll start to see me more of a strategic threat. I'm quite physical. I'm thinking they're definitely, no, it's Survivor. So they're definitely going to be oaks who are 3 or 4 times taller than I am. So that's not an issue for me. So I definitely want to be seen as really sociable and a guy who's just enjoying being on the island. And slowly I'll really get into it and get people to do my bidding.
Which Survivor player are you most like?
The person who I like the most and I'd love to be most like would be Yul Kwan, so winner of Cook Islands. He was also a strategy consultant. You know, and I've always considered myself a triple threat, good physically.
Steve, you're a super fan, Kieran. It's fine. That's a good answer. I induct you.
Yeah, I mean, listen, maybe a little less excusable since I feel like Yul Kwan would be an extra special pull
if he hadn't
before
just
Winners at War.
Still, though. Yeah. Like, he was a pre-merge boot, you know, like, you gotta be a real fan to be, like, that guy.
Yeah, and I think it also helps that we don't have many strategy consultants on Survivor. I just did a quick search in Survivor Wikia, and we got Yul, we got Mookie. I think, like, Angelina was a financial consultant, not necessarily a strategy consultant, but it's not necessarily a career you see on there. So I could imagine that he was watching and said, oh, there's another strategy consultant on the show, and he definitely sympathized a lot with someone like Yul, but definitely not a bad choice considering how heady Yul of a player Yul is in general.
Mm. Still a good answer, and he passes the test. You know what? You know what you need to do to prove to me that you are a super fan? Say, I don't know that I am a super fan, and then you're in. That's that's the key to it.
Interesting. So you have to feel like I don't deserve it, and that's when you truly deserve it. It's like the whole Willy Wonka thing.
Yes. Exactly that. I am like Willy Wonka in that I'm cruel to these contestants. My expectations are too high. And should I even be doing this in the first place? So, Kieran, welcome to the superfans.
Myself a triple threat, good physically, sociably, and strategically. And he was all three. So I'd love to say most like him. However, that's like the fan in me is like, how dare I just put myself in the upper echelon of Survivor gameplay. I think from a South African perspective, it would be a hybrid of Jacques and Mike. So Jacques strategically, Mike sociably. So somewhere in between there.
What do you desire in an alliance partner?
I would want someone who, A, is not volatile, right? So predictable. So the more predictable you are, the better for me. So maybe it's actually predictability, right? So, and that generally goes hand in hand with a lack of volatility. So that would be good. And then someone who is probably more logical, so that I can explain my moves. And even if it's something that goes against our alliance, I can explain my way back in. As opposed to someone who is overly emotional and will hold it against me. Though that being said, if someone's on either end of the spectrum, too emotional, too logical, they both work quite well. If you're too logical, I can do anything and explain my way back in. If you're too emotional, I can continue to tug at your heartstrings and bring myself back in. So, yes, probably somewhere on either end of the spectrum.
What is the ethical or moral line for you in the game of Survivor?
So, yeah, I mean, what I won't do is I won't be a bigot or join in if my alliance are like being unnecessarily cruel and mean and mean spirited about someone who's at the bottom of an alliance or someone they don't like. I won't join into that. I don't think that has anything to do with gameplay. I think that's just shoving your better position in someone's face, which isn't what I would do. So probably that. I won't swear on my family, not because. Firstly, I don't believe in it, so I don't think it's going to have any effect. But from a jury management perspective, knowing what I know about South Africans, I think they'd take, like, it would really upset them.
This was something I really wanted to talk about.
Yeah. No, I love that. I love that because we just spoke about it on a podcast that was recorded after this interview was done. On Survivor South Africa Season 5, I think we said, like, I said I would swear on anyone because I don't believe in it, but then it's how does it look to the jury? And what I'm really getting from Kieran's answers is, like, there's an extreme extra layer of thoughtfulness to it. Like, you say, like, what's the moral line? And everyone says, oh, I don't have a moral line. I'm here to play it. And that's a very fair answer because that's basically what we're asking. But the fact that he can think above that to say, like, there probably are some things I wouldn't do. Like, yes, I'm here to backstab and betray, but there's, like, a humanity to that that I'm not going to, like, venture into. So I just, what I'm taking from his answers is, like, wow, there's, like, an extra layer of thinking there.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily the I won't do this because I personally don't want to, right? I think people can certainly say I won't swear on my family because I certainly hold myself to those values and I never put my family's that word name out there if I was going to betray someone. But more so, Kieran's looking externally. He's saying I wouldn't swear on my family because that's not something that's really valued at this point in South Africa. He does position it interestingly from the evolution perspective, which I think is intriguing because I wouldn't necessarily say that's gone away in U.S. Survivor specifically. Maybe just the focus of the storytelling has been less on that. But I think even in recent seasons, we have seen people break pretty big promises and still face emotional repercussions because of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's saying that. I mean, I want to hear more, but I think he's saying that in South Africa, like, the jury would not appreciate that.
Right, exactly.
Breaking it, and that's like he's looking at it culturally.
Yeah, but I think he's also looking at it evolutionarily as well. Like, I think he says basically, like, South Africa has not come to that point. I guess the question is, again, you know this better than I do, would they ever get to that point? Or is that just something that, from a cultural perspective, is something that probably would not fly terribly well?
Well, you can see even in, like, some of the bios, like, there's, like, some religiousness there that people might care about. It also depends on the cast that you get, but it might even be the fact that it's season 8 in Survivor South Africa. Not everyone has watched the US or everything. So you're not in, like, season 40 where people maybe expected as much. And I mean, obviously they have watched parts of that. And even in modern US seasons, people have been really upset when swears have been broken. But they were more upset in season 9 of the US. You know, Twyla famously did it. And
right.
It was, like, the worst thing ever. And I think there's, like, that huge gamer attitude at the moment in the US where it might matter less, where that might not exist in South African Survivor yet, more than just, like, South Africa as a place. So I think that is a good take. And I will also say, like, his, just going back to some of his other answers, when he talks about, like, having really predictable people, that is straight out of the Yulquan handbook. Like, that's why Yul wanted to work with Penna, because he felt he knew what Penna would do because he was self-interested, and that was predictable. So he's putting his money where his mouth is in terms of wanting to be, like, these really smart players.
Yeah, it's interesting that he comes from the angle of risk management, almost, of let me mitigate as many factors as possible. It sort of is speaking a bit to what Dino was saying about how you never really have control, you have influence. And so I guess if you don't have control, try to mitigate those uncontrollable factors as much as you can. But interestingly, despite being so heady about all this stuff, he says he can be perceived as the lovable idiot, which I think is just
how?
So interestingly disparate.
I don't know. I've heard you talk for 5 minutes and I can tell you're really intelligent. So I don't know how that would be possible.
Yeah, so we shall see. But let's go through the last few minutes here of Kieran's interview.
Africans, I think they'd take, like, it would really upset them, right? I don't think the game's advanced enough, such as the US seasons where Tony could get away with swearing on his mom, his dad, his dog, and his neighbor's dog and get away with it. I don't think South African jury members would. So for me, my line is far out. I mean, like, I don't think I'd be upset if someone blindsides me. I'm anticipating it. But I'm more wary of how other people are. So my line will be where other people draw their line.
Would you rather be voted out pre-merge or get 0 votes at the final tribal council?
I would rather be voted out pre-merge and play a really great game and people want me to play again, as opposed to go all the way to the end and everyone's like, this guy was absolutely useless. What a goat. You know?
What will be the biggest component of your game? Physical, strategy, or social?
I definitely say strategic. I mean, it's in my training. Though, that being said, I'm also going to have to dial myself back. There's only so much strategizing you can do before you overthink things. So it's going to be a good mixture of thinking through things, but also going with my gut, but definitely strategic.
What's your favorite advantage in Survivor history?
I know what I hate, and the reward steal advantage I think is absolutely useless. It doesn't move the game at all. I actually think the best advantage is an advantage you make up.
Steers.
So I've seen
Steers.
A lot.
I just want to make the tagline of this podcast, I know what I hate. Like,
I mean, it's very true about life, right? It's like, what do you want? Well, I know what I don't want.
Yeah, no, I think that if Jason can give us our ending line, Kieran just gave us our tagline, I know what I hate. I love it. So yeah. Perfect.
And I do agree. I think that the reward steal, I mean, there's a reason why it never came back after Millennials versus Gen X, right? It leads to that interesting moment where Adam announces that he's not going to use it, but it kind of ends up being a nothing burger overall. So again, good on Kieran for making that deep pull as well.
This guy's really smart. Let's keep going.
To players take advantages and just bend the truth slightly and use it to their advantage. And because advantages are still fairly, like, it's not a hidden immunity app. It could be anything. I think the greatest advantage with an advantage is making it your own.
What celebrity or fictional character would you want to come out for a loved one's visit?
If it was a celebrity, I'd say Trevor Noah. I'm a big fan of him. I think
Steers.
He's
Steers.
Yeah,
I love this guy as well.
React to Trevor Noah.
Yes, I love Trevor Noah, and I love that he said Trevor Noah. I mean, I guess like he's in South Africa, that probably feels like very, very regular pick. But anyway, he's saying a lot of things that are really appealing to me.
Well, he actually writes in his bio that he read a few books on decision making, and he actually reread Born a Crime by Trevor Noah for insight into the human condition, which I find very intriguing.
That's the one book I've read in like the last 5 years. No regrets. Great answer.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think about it? As someone who has read the book, I mean, what do you think about it specifically with the notion of taking away from it, like, Trevor Noah's specific insight into the human condition?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I don't know if I'd read it for that purpose, but it was a wonderful book. Highly recommend to everyone. I think I've even recommended it to you, Mike, because Trevor Noah has had a very varied life and been in a lot of different situations. So yeah, it's distinctly South African. So if you want to get a kind of insight into different parts of South Africa, different demographics, different ways that people have grown up and lived, I do think you get like, you know, a bit of an overview into that. So also, I'm sure you had a great time reading it, but I think you can glean some stuff from that.
Well, on that note, let me actually mention something else from his bio. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this, that he says his greatest strength is basically being a social chameleon. And he says, growing up, I was often the, quote, token Indian guy who spoke with a, quote, white accent. The experience of being an outsider taught me a lot about how to connect with different people based on who they are and how they identify themselves. It also showed me that despite people's worst intentions, we are all very similar at our core. And if you understand a person's history and motivations, you can get along with anyone. So I think that also makes sense why he sees a lot of sympathy with Trevor Noah, who, like you said, I think has a very multicultural background. As someone himself who had to grow up with a lot of adaptability, unfortunately, I think he very much sees himself there.
Hey, Kieran is a deep thinker. I think that's what we're getting from the interview.
All right, well, let's finish up these deep thoughts on Kieran.
He would be, if I had to say a celebrity that would embody my game, I'd love to play a game like the way Trevor Noah is as a person, right? You can see he's incredibly intelligent, very strategic in the way he thinks, but also so social. And his ability to observe and understand is so powerful. And I'd love to get his insight.
What food would you sit out an immunity challenge for?
I think I'd sit out, it's Rich saying this before the game starts, but I think I'd sit out all food. I think, I'm here to play the game. I can eat later.
If you could have any superpower, what would it be and why?
Oh, the age-old question. It's always a toss-up between being invisible for a host of nefarious reasons or being able to fly just because that looks pretty cool. I actually think it would be to go back in time, to rewind a day and restart so you can correct your mistakes.
So it's about 24 hours before the game starts at the time you're recording this. What's going through your head as you're about to enter the game?
So one or two things are going through my head. More around just the practicalities of getting onto the island, speaking to the players, building some bonds. But beyond that, in terms of gameplay and strategizing, that's not going through my head. Very much my process is take your time and really like build up a lot of comfort with all that source material. And then closer to the time, you let it go and you play from your subconscious almost. You know, you just you let it go, come out naturally. I'm not trying to be too rehearsed.
And that is Kieran.
I was so worried. I was like, imagine if he just gives like these awesome, thoughtful answers, and then we're like, what superpower? And he's like, to freeze things. And I'm like, oh, Kieran, why?
Yeah, that's like, oh no, you're one Achilles heel as you came up with the worst superpower.
I mean, I'm marrying the guy who said that, but still. Look, I love Kieran. He's so smart. I mean, he talks about like not overthinking. I think that is a danger. I think that he probably has a tendency to do that. I say that as a fellow overthinker. Because he just thinks so much, clearly, and he has a humility to him that I found really endearing, like even saying you're and then being like, I feel bad even putting myself, you know, in that pantheon. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a lot of the other people today, well, you know, and again, great on the confidence, but it was a lot of, I will be Rob and Tony and David combined, but better. And maybe that confidence will put them in good stead. Maybe that's what you need. But that humility from Kieran really appealed to me. I'm pumped up now by a lot of these people.
Yeah, and that's the thing as well, is I think that's where sort of the more jovial, jocular side comes out, where he talks about being perceived as a lovable idiot, that I think he's very sarcastic. I think that there's certainly, maybe not as sarcastic as the way Dino was, but I think he's very much saying like, yeah, I'll be very smart, but then I'll also throw something at the end that sort of comes back on myself. And that can be very alleviating to people, right? Like, you can certainly build up your threat level by saying some very smart things, but then I think maybe if you curb them with a joke at the end or something stupid back on yourself, that might bring down your threat level a little bit. But I think, much like you, Shannon, Kieran has a heavy sense of competition. He says, quote unquote, playing for fun is quite literally the most annoying concept in the world.
Hard to disagree. I mean, what would you win if you were playing for fun? What would you gain from that? Fun?
Certainly not a zoo, that is for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if you got to buy a zoo, you obviously have to win. Kieran doesn't have that problem that we know of, unless this is like a running theme, but I love that competitiveness. I will say across the board, I expected everyone to say, obviously I want to get to the end and have the experience and get zero votes. And the fact that we had a few answers saying, I'd actually rather be a big player that goes home early, like I wanted that to be like an interesting would you rather, and I'm grateful that people took some intrigue there.
I'd say it's a little bit of a take on the infamous Big Brother, would you rather win and be hated or lose and be loved? Where, you know, maybe there some people tried to get a bit out of it. I'll admit of being like, well, I get voted out pre-merge, but that's because then I'll be brought back for another season and then I'll win. You know, they're really trying to build the story forward. But I also think it speaks to a really interesting, maybe overall theme of this cast. We're only a quarter of the way through, but it does seem like across the board, we're going to have big players.
Yeah.
And not only that, we're going to have big, varied players. I mean, between the five that we talked about, we have a rugby coach who is not afraid to channel Russell Hance. You know, someone who has definitely a high opinion of himself, but is also trying to be adaptable. We have a very self-effacing escape room owner who prides himself on his tenacity. We have a jungle boy who also might have a bit of a sinister side if need be. And we have this very brainy guy who comes across as he says, a lovable idiot. So these are very much multidimensional characters, even just from investigating them through their interviews. I cannot imagine how they're all going to interact with each other, let alone the other 15 contestants.
It's a good group. I'm excited about it. Like it's becoming very real now, seeing those interviews and really getting a sense of the players. And thank you so much to Survivor South Africa and LaRue for giving us this opportunity to get these interviews. I mean, it's an honor asking them how they feel 24 hours out from playing and getting that insight. So I'm impressed. I'm impressed with these first few players. I feel like none of them seem boring to me, and that would be worse than.
So that is our first podcast. Of course, the next one that you're going to listen to in about 5 days' time is going to be our first interview with the first five women. Just if you want to do your homework ahead of time, I believe that's Amy, Anesu, Carla, Marisha, and Nicole, not to be confused with Chappie's biological mother.
This podcast has been so long that I forgot that Chappie said that for a little bit. What a wild time we've had.
Exactly. And it's only going to get wilder. We have 15 more interviews, Shannon. And then even before that, this is preseason. Like, we're actually going to get to see these people play Survivor. This has made me so excited. Listening back to these interviews, editing them, and then reinvestigating them with you to react. Like, I know this was a bit of an experiment we were trying to pull off, but I feel like it's been successful so far. I hope people enjoyed it.
Yeah, I definitely had a lot of fun. It was cool having those reactions in the moment. Like, it was so hard for me not going in and listening to those interviews. because I have them and I can, but I was like, save it for the podcast, save those like genuine reactions. I'm really glad that I did. These are some cool characters. These are the people we will be spending the next several months of our lives with in a deep way. So it's important to get to know them.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will absolutely get to know them in the weeks and weeks and months to come of Survivor South Africa Immunity Island. We're just getting started.
So exciting. So, Mike, what else do you have going on in the podcasting world? Although, keep in mind that this is a few days in the future.
Okay, a few days in the future. So let me put myself, like, I probably have 30 more podcasts that I'm recording.
Yeah.
No, the usual stuff on post-show recaps between Lost Down the Hatch, The Bloom Files. We will have just finished up our coverage of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier with a big feedback show. Then other than that, at this point, I will have appeared on a podcast covering episode 11 of The Circle with Taryn Armstrong, where we did make Dragon Ball Z references. So hopefully Jason feels that. He gets sort of a sense of it, much like the Saiyans do. And then I'm going to be on the Wednesday night recap for the penultimate episode of Big Brother 9. This very much is like a sunrise, sunset, one major reality international show ends and another one begins very soon. So you can check that out, as well as I mentioned, Outwit, Outplay, Outlist. We got together to talk about some of Survivor's most dynamic duos. And who knows, maybe by the end of this series or this season, we might have another power couple to add on the international version of it. So all that is happening, and you can always follow my exploits online at a Mike Bloom type on Twitter.
If you were including international and Outwit, Outplay, Outlist, Tom and Palesa, I feel like. High on the list.
Well, then, and then did David and Luke have to be in there too?
Yeah, my God, we've had some good ones. International is fun. That, you know, and yeah, I know what I hate, but international is fun. I covered Survivor All-Stars last week, I guess, with Rob and Matt Liguori, so check that out. And otherwise, yeah, we're just keeping on with the Survivor South Africa train. You can follow us at Channing Gates, at A Mike Bloom type. Dino, you're already doing that. Thank you so much. Yeah. And we can't wait to get through the rest of this preseason and then into the season proper. This is so exciting, Mike.
Yeah, let me also wish a happy birthday to Asher Bloom, who on the day this is being released is turning 2 years old. My son, only 16 more years, and then you get to play Survivor, or maybe less, depending on if Jeff Probst keeps bringing down the age range.
He can probably play in like 4 or 5 years at this point, the way that it's just going down.
Which would be an interesting concept. I don't know if I'd like it, but it'd be an interesting concept.
No, I know what I hate, and I would hate that.
You don't want Asher to debate if he wants to use his reward steal when I go visit him for the loved ones visit?
I mean, not at the age of 7. Can you do that in 20 years from now?
When I visit him for the loved ones visit, should I dress up as Thanos?
Yeah, and you should bake him cookies.
Yeah, exactly. I should, with giant, meaty Thanos gauntlets on, bake him cookies in Ponderosa.
Okay, I think we're summing up what we got from these contestants. So thank you guys so much for listening. Check out all of the stuff. Also check out our interview with LaRue if you haven't yet. That was months ago, but that has some more stuff on Survivor South Africa. Immunity Island, that's all into the International Survivor Hap-Up feed. Subscribe. This is the best time to subscribe as we get into the season, but thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you, Mike, as always. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And until next time, keep evolving and come visit my zoo, Survivor lovers. Bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Give them the swammer.
£1 million.
Million
euro. Million.
Million.
Try
the
scribe.
Try the scribe.
Try.